Hey everyone, it's Nick here, and welcome to Connectivity 200. Today, for the special 200th episode, we're doing things a little bit different. We have a few different segments for you today. Starting off, we have a newscast reunion. For those who don't know, the newscast was the previous incarnation of Connectivity, basically. And after that, we move into a short listener mail segment with myself and Adam. And then we will be finishing up with a new episode of Themesters, and this one uses music from the Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow games. So I hope you enjoy the episode. We did have plans to have a Jeopardy segment with Zach and Scott and a few other people, but technical reasons, we have had to abort that segment, but we should be able to bring that to you in a few weeks' time, hopefully. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and see you in another couple of weeks.
Welcome to NWR Newscast. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and you're probably wondering what the fuck this is. Well, first off, I'm Neil Ronahan, and joined with me are my other Newscast regulars, Andy Gergen.
I'm a regular.
Zach Miller.
So am I.
And Nathan Mustafa.
Yeah, real regular.
Yep. So for people who have no idea about this, they're wondering why Connectivity 200 has this newscast thing attached to it. Connectivity used to be newscast back in the long, long ago of 2011. Ironically, the last episode of Connectivity, or the last episode of newscast, was posted on my wedding day.
Nice. So,
because I went and checked it, and I was like, huh, that's weird.
Congratulations, young man.
Why is that date sticking
but
out to me?
Us getting back together has nothing to do with episode 200. It has more to do with a sequel to Deer Basement coming out. And we had to get Nathan to talk about it.
I thought Neil got divorced, maybe, and he's finally allowed to.
Sorry, Connectivity is coming into newscast. The wedding's done.
Oh,
the marriage is over. Honeymoon's over. But anyway, so newscast was this thing that we did before Connectivity that, eventually, after 69 episodes, not intended, then newscast became Connectivity. We changed it a little bit, and now we have 200 episodes of Connectivity. All in all, the newscast Connectivity train has been going on for almost 7 years.
That's insane.
Which is six and a half.
In the last episode of newscast, we introduced Scott and then quickly drove him away.
Yep. Scott lasted like 2 or 3 years. Scott was around for maybe half of the existence of this show.
Yeah.
Which, considering that he was a driving force of it for a while, is weird. But there was some talk. I looked up some old emails from early 2011, which would have been a couple months before newscast turned into Connectivity. And that was around the time where we stopped caring about the news.
Yep.
Which, that's kind of what happens whenever you do a news-focused show. Just go over and on YouTube, on NWR TV, and watch Nintendo News Report. And you'll find out what happens when you cover news for a year on a show. You get bored of it really quickly. So we were coming up with ideas, names for a show that newscast would turn into. And I went through the emails, and I got a list of all of the names that we came up with.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm just going to go down this. The Kids Table.
Nice.
The Podcast. Nintendo Pirate Radio. Podcast Does What Nintendo Don't. Zachary Miller's Boobs Cast. Withered Technology. NWR Love Hotel. NWR Sausage Fest. Player 2 Podcast. Gaming with the Stars. Off-topic cast featuring Nathan Mustafa. NWR Jigglecast. Stereoscopic 2D. It's like Avatar without the visuals. Four Guys, One Giant Black Mic. Backwards Compatible. Third Pillar. Bramble Pelt,
what?
Nintendo Week, and Dark Gary Nation.
Oh.
And going back to that, actually,
last one hurts.
Withered Technology was something that got bandied about for about a week before we just stopped talking about it altogether. But yeah, that's
we
that's,
had so many.
I like third pillar. Third pillar still rings true.
Yeah, the kids' table was one of my favorites.
Who came up with connectivity?
That might have been Scott. Like
I feel like it might have been Scott or Sklens.
Yeah. How do we not get Scott back for this? We should have gotten Scott back.
He's going to be on Jeopardy. There's a Jeopardy episode.
Yeah, I suppose.
Jeopardy segment on this episode.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I had...
All right.
I had a
Is that your surprise, Neil?
Yeah,
that's good. That's a good surprise.
Neil and I both prepared, like, small segments that we didn't tell anyone else about. So, I wanted to, in the history of, newscast having all these quiz shows, I wanted to put a little time-based quiz out there for you guys. No. We'll go through these pretty quickly. No. The last time that we recorded a podcast together as a foursome was Connectivity Episode 100. In the days since, how many Super Mario mainline platformers have been released?
Are we considering like
3D? 3D and 2D?
I would count 3D, 2D, and Mario Maker.
Three.
Name them, Neil.
3D World, Super Mario Maker.
Well, are you counting?
No, I think it's just
Super Mario Bros. 2.
That came out before. Pretty sure that was before.
I think it's 3D World and Mario Maker.
I think that's correct.
I was thinking 3D Land initially, but that would have been too close.
Oh.
Let's turn the topic over to television. How many new episodes of the television show The Office have aired since the last time we did this?
Oh my god. The whole show?
like 10?
Zero.
Correct answer is zero. Nathan's got it.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
The show ended in April, but I won't say when we recorded because that's cheating. what was the number one movie at the box office? You're never gonna get this. Just FYI.
Transformers 4.
No.
No.
The correct answer is One Direction. This Is Us.
Oh, Jesus. Oh.
I think my wife watched that.
Including Connectivity 100, how many episodes of Newscast have there been before tonight?
70.
Yup. Neil's got it.
Yeah, 69 is very easy to remember.
The last time we did this, what was the last Nintendo handheld or console released?
The XL.
That's right. Neil's got it. What was the last mainline Pokemon game that was released?
Black and White 2.
Yes. Zach gets it first. And then finally... Within 20, can any of you name how many days have passed since the last time we did this? Here's a hint. September 1st, 2013.
Okay.
Why are you making me do math?
It's like 2.5 years.
750.
919.
Holy shit!
919 days.
Is after episode 100, we were like, hey man, we should do this sometime regularly.
Yeah, I know, right? And then bonus round, how many times have I moved since the last time we did this?
Twice!
Twice is right!
Oh.
Yay! Everyone wins a bonus
prize.
You know
what's funny? I think I've also moved twice.
I think you have,
actually. I think
you have. Oh, jeez. We should do this every time we move twice.
Alright, so hopefully it won't be a very long time.
See you all in 2018.
Everybody here owns a house. Hopefully we're in them for a while. I guess.
Jesus, I hope.
We're due for a big earthquake in California, so
we'll see. That might hit Alaska, too.
Moving inland.
Yeah, we're waiting on the next big one.
Yep. The whole plate's going under.
Yep.
So should we move on to listener mail?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Alright, I guess Do we each want to read one, or just...
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, we do.
All right.
You go first, Neil.
All right. Kasaki Project writes, it's the internet's Kasaki Project here.
Kasaki Project.
Foremost, love you guys and miss the old days.
Yeah.
We miss them, too. So I have some stuff for your reunion. All right, I'm gonna... This is Neil speaking. Let's go these one at a time. First and foremost, Nate, what's the best metal song in a Nintendo game?
Okay, I didn't read this beforehand. So if I were to cheat, I would say I would be able to pick a song out of Brutal Legend, which is kind of the soundtrack's comprised of actual, you know, artists or popular. Oh my goodness. If I were to read the question,
it's gotta be one of the Kirby games.
Then all of the answers I prepared are bogus. crap. How about something that appeared on a Nintendo platform?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a licensed song. It just says
Nintendo
too.
Game. I mean, there's a lot of variants.
Okay, then I'll give it to like the Shade Man theme.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, I like that.
All right.
Zach, what's the best cleavage in a Nintendo game?
Recently, friend of the show, Travis Brody, in an attempt to get me to buy the game, Twittered me a screenshot from Fire Emblem Fates of some busty woman in
that
a...
That sounds about right.
Huh?
That sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah, in some kind of, I don't know, armor. And I thought, that's pretty good for a Nintendo game.
How about Coda Princess?
Yeah, that's pretty good too.
I guess really anything from Atlas, I guess, probably, huh?
Yeah, pretty much anything from Atlas. Previous to that, I probably would have said
Senran
Kaguya Nanbu from... Oh, Senran. Of course! Senran wins!
I'm surprised it wasn't that, and then a mic drop.
I had to think about it for a little while.
I have to say there are no winners in this category.
So, Andy, tell us again about how great Zombie U is and your dream sequel for NX.
I just want to mention that I still own the game and haven't touched it.
Well, it's because you hate zombies.
That's
a big part of it, right?
Yeah, that's a real big part of it.
It's pretty great. It's pretty great. Probably my favorite launch game, at least my favorite third-party launch game, that's for damn sure. There will be no Dream sequel for NX. They may make another one and put it on a PS4, and I might buy it there. I actually picked up the PC version of this for Steam, and you know what? Turns out, you can play it without a second screen. It's just fine. I posted in Miiverse once that they should update the game on its one-year anniversary, or it's the first anniversary of its Halloween, I guess, the first Halloween. And add off-screen play, because I wanted to play it, and off-screen play was easier. And I got like a shit ton of Miiverse comments saying, "You can't do that! You'd ruin the experience if you took away the second screen." Hey, fuck you.
What if it came with a VR
it's
backpack
fine.
For you to rifle through?
A VR backpack? There you go. It turns out...
Maybe that's where Zombie will show up next, is in a VR game.
It turns out that, like, if you want to recreate the experience of having, like, being vulnerable while you rummage through your backpack, you just put a little screen in the bottom corner that shows your dude rummaging through a backpack while you go through your menu.
Yep.
Ooh, boy, I solve world problems. Like, Jesus, come on, people. Zombie U is great. There'll probably never be another one on NX. If they do make another one, I'm sure it'll be on PS4 and Steam, and that's where I will play it. But my hopes are not up. And honestly, like, as much as I really enjoyed that game, every time I've tried to go back to it, I've never been able to stick with it. Although, I do tend to finish it again one of these days. I'm like probably like 3 or 4 hours through on my my Steam play. Just kind of got a little stalled on it. I'll go back to it one of these days. It's so good.
Nathan doesn't like it because it's a roguelike.
It's not a roguelike.
It's not really a roguelike.
It has roguelike elements.
You lose all your shit when you die.
You do, but you can get it back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have to go kill the zombie that was created from your dead character, and then you get your stuff back. But if you die on the way back to get your backpack, then it's gone. So you have one
like
shot.
Shovel Knight.
Yeah, exactly. You have one shot to get your shit back, and if you fail to get your shit back, your shit's gone.
Zach, I do enjoy roguelike mechanics when they're applied to a good game.
Sure.
Finally, Neil.
Bam!
All right, finally, me. How do you feel about Metroid Prime Federation Force looking like Destiny for babies? Like, I'm totally okay with this. The game looks very fun.
It looks terrible.
That is
looks
fine.
Awful.
I'm talking about, like, if literally the visuals. I don't like the chibi style at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
especially because it's supposed to take place in the same universe as Metroid Prime 2.
Right.
I haven't watched the Direct yet, so I can't talk, but I will play this game as much as I played Triforce Heroes.
The thing that,
so not at all.
The thing say, that not made at all. Me laugh in that Direct trailer was that the things you're controlling are actually mech suits with giant heads, but the dudes who get in the mech suits also have chibi-fied giant heads.
Yeah. They're made in the image of their creator, Zach.
Right.
Yeah. It's like Samus.
I want to play a game starring. I want to play a game starring the Chozo, where the goal of the game is to not go extinct.
I like the art style of
it's a survival Metroid horror game.
I don't see why they couldn't have, you know, just up
kind of. Yeah, like yeah, since this is basically a sequel,
right?
I mean, when I look at Metroid Prime Federation Force, like kind of not. I don't disagree with anything shitting on the art style. I don't really, like, I'd rather have a realistic-looking art style, but I'd also have a game that runs very smoothly. But, like Nathan said, they did that already. It was called Metroid Prime Hunters. It was on inferior technology. Yeah. How, like, what happened that they can't do
right,
that?
Now, right, now they have the opportunity with the new 3DS, if they really wanted to amp it up, and you know, you've got the Circle Pad Pro built into it, I think they could have done a really good job with it, and it just doesn't look it doesn't look like something that would get me into the Metroid Prime franchise, and it certainly doesn't look like something that's for people who enjoy it. Maybe it'll be a great game, but just I just mean visually, it really doesn't jive with kind of what we've seen from the franchise.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the new 3DS, Nathan, because in the extended apology that they played before the trailer for this game, they said, we didn't think we'd be able to actually make this game and make it run, but then the new 3DS solved that problem.
Well, it's not a new 3DS so exclusive, is it?
Well, I don't know. No, it's not.
I think it's just new 3DS.
You just have even bigger chibi heads on the new 3DS.
More polygons and dem heads.
I don't mind cartoony graphics. You know, I love Wind Waker. This just doesn't look like something someone put a lot of a thought into.
If there's anything that I learned from Kid Icarus Uprising, it's that I don't want to play a competitive multiplayer shooter on the 3DS. No, thank you.
The funny thing is that if there's anything I learned from Kid Icarus Uprising, is that I want to do that.
Well, then, you are in luck, sir.
Kid Icarus Uprising, that was incredible.
There is a game just for you coming out around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm excited for Federation Force, and there's a good number of people on staff, no one here, that is also excited for it, and I imagine we'll have fun playing it multiplayer, even if we have to open up Skype to talk to each other.
Now, once it fails spectacularly, are we going to start? We're going to start calling it Federation Farce, right?
I mean, that probably works. If someone, how many people do you think will have Federation Farce in like their abstracts for reviews?
Ooh, lots, yeah, quite lots.
It's like how every Wii game, or every Wii U game that comes out from now on, it'll be the Wii U swan song.
Yeah,
like we've reached that point. Like with the Wii, it was like Xenoblades, the Wii Swan Song, the Skyward Sword, the Wii Swan Song, the Last Story, the Wii Swan Song.
Before that, it was this is a really great game, but is it a good Wii U game?
Wii game,
yep.
My God.
But like, I've already heard people referring to like, oh, Paper Mario is going to be the Wii U Swan Song, Zelda Wii U. I'm like, all right, you know, the Wii U is probably going to have another year of games come out with it, whether or not the NX comes out. I think it's going to come out in 2016, but even if it did not, like, I think we've got, like, I think the Wii U will be a supported system until 2017, and we're already at the point where everything is its last game ever.
Right.
I don't know, I didn't like the multiplayer footage they showed. I certainly didn't like the voices that accompanied it.
Yeah, the it still kind of boggles my mind that they seem to not have any fucking clue as to how to market this game.
Yeah,
we're still talking about Federation.
Yeah, it just looks so generic.
Oh yeah,
you know, you look at it, if you ask someone to draw, you know, draw me a you know, a cute looking space marine. Four. You know, number one. Now make this guy's visor blue. Now make this guy's visor green. You know, it just, I don't know.
This is not what I want out of a Metroid game. I don't want to play multiplayer on the 3DS, really, at all. I didn't really like the Four Swords, the free one they gave us. It was okay. Like, I just don't want to play multiplayer on that
this
system.
Is,
that's
this
not
is
why
the
I have
guy
it.
That
Andy,
tweets,
Andy, get
this
in your
the
car.
Guy that tweets Smash 3DS every other week.
Okay, that's different because Smash is incredible.
So it can be done.
Andy, get in your damn car, drive here, we'll play some Triforce Heroes.
I'm sure that will be
and
great.
You'll be like,
honestly.
Oh no, this is really fun. It's just that I'll never have the chance to do this.
You know, here's another strike against the art style in Federation Force, is that we live in a world where Monster Hunter 4 exists.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that game's awesome.
And
by
it looks
the way.
Really
They're
good.
Also,
and it's
yeah,
multiplayer.
It looks great.
And it's, yeah.
And it's totally pushing the 3DS to its limits, but I don't understand why Metroid Prime Federation Force couldn't do the same if it's not
because
already.
Because it looks like they're not putting that much effort into it. And may we find out that, you know, it's got a great, you know, single player component and you know, something that you can really sink your teeth into, but it just doesn't seem like that.
Yeah. We'll find out soon enough. I think it's going to be out within the next 3 months. So,
we should move on to the next letter, probably, huh?
Yeah. So who's got Alex from Third Ray Minion? Who's going to read that one?
Hello, Newscast. I'm not sure whether this will make it to the Newscast, but I figure, why not ask some questions I'm sure we've all asked before. With Nintendo's pushing more towards indie games to bolster its lineup, do you think Nintendo will push for engine parity faster? Will they have indie games pushed at all at E3? Or focus entirely on their bigger hitters?
I think they'll do what they've done at most E3s, where they'll have like a token indie game or three, and like a trailer.
Sizzle reel.
Yeah.
I mean, at this
they
point...
They didn't even have a sizzle reel for the North American Direct.
Yeah, that was weird. That was like the first time that's ever happened, where they haven't had an indie showing at a Direct.
At this point, indie games are their entire third-party lineup. I think the real question is, will indie games continue to pursue Nintendo? Have very many of them done well enough? Like, I mean, Shovel Knight obviously did really, really well, but, I mean...
Affordable Space Adventures apparently did very well. I was talking on Twitter with people about it, and I was just like, that couldn't have done well. And then the developer was like, nah, actually, we're real happy. I'm like, okay.
That's good. Like, I just feel like, I feel like I've heard stories that it's just not worth people's time to keep putting games on Wii U, but I don't know.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, I have as well. From primary sources.
Yeah.
But,
maybe you should make your games as good as Shovel Knight and there won't be a problem.
I do think it's kind of a no-brainer that they'll feature indie games pretty heavily in their E3 presentation. Or at least, you know, have one that, you know, they really push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a Shovel Knight. Whatever's next from Yacht Club Games.
Shovel Knight 64!
Yeah, Super Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight Galaxy.
I can't beat the boss rush at the end.
The boss rush is a bitch.
Wait, Shovel Knight or Plague of Shadows?
Shovel Knight.
Wow.
I beat the boss rush in Shovel Knight, but I can never beat it in New Game Plus.
Yeah, that's what
I couldn't
what
either, no, screw that, because you don't get any health.
You get some health. You get health like every other boss, I think, in the boss rush.
I play RPGs.
Or maybe like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
But even the stuff of the European Direct that they showed off was like Super Meat Boy.
Right.
Pixel Junk Monsters. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all the stuff that came out literally generations
ago. 5 years
ago.
Wait, Meat Boy is coming to Wii U?
Yeah.
Yeah, this spring, apparently.
But it's the shitty soundtrack version.
Oh
yeah,
my...
That's what I didn't realize how much the soundtrack mattered to me in Meat Boy until I think I got the PS4 version on PlayStation Plus. Yeah. And I played it up, and I was like, I can't do this.
No.
Like, that soundtrack for the 360 version is sublime.
You need it.
I know the Binding of Isaac was coming to Wii U, but I haven't heard. I don't think I'd heard about Meat Boy. Anyway.
Binding of Isaac, Wii U is supposedly the good version.
The one that doesn't crash all the time?
Right.
Did this 3DS version ever get patched?
It's gotten patched 3 times.
And I don't think it's been fixed.
It's still not. Totally fits.
That's part of the roguelike elements.
Hey, why not?
All right, next letter. Carl writes.
Wait,
hey guys.
Don't I get to read one?
No.
Well, there's
we have four of them.
I know, there's four. Each of us reads
you
one.
You get Tyler.
Yeah, I'm sorry, do you want Carl?
Fine.
There's one. I mean, sorry.
Zach does.
I just thought I would.
Zach does.
I thought I would keep shit moving, but Zach was like, nope. Stop the presses.
Zach is hell-bent on interrupting every single question.
All right, Zach, you read Carl's.
All right. Carl Castaneda from crosstalk.com with a W writes, hey guys, long time listener, first time writer. Just wondering with I haven't read this. with Project Cafe probably releasing next year, how soon do you think it'll be before we get some HD Zelda? I mean, can you imagine how cool that would be as a launch title? We saw how well Twilight Princess did as a Wii launch title. So can you imagine taking down Moblins and Bokoblins? Bokoblins?
That's a thing.
In sharp as hell, 1080p. Hell yeah, baby. Hopefully it won't be more than a year or two before that happens. Nintendo wouldn't be so stupid to hold that off until 2016, right? Right? Ha ha, let's laugh at things that are ridiculous. Like the possibility of a multiplayer Metroid game that doesn't have voice chat, like 10 years after Metroid Prime Hunters. What an unlikely scenario. Anyway, go Romney 2012. That's the best piece of listener mail we've ever received.
To be fair, it's one of four pieces of listener mail we've ever received.
I know, this is like more listener mail than we got in the entirety of our
and run. Then like three-fourths of the people are people that have contributed to the website, two of which were longtime staffers.
Yeah.
HD Zelda's gonna rock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm really excited for Zelda Wii U, but yeah, like that needed to come out yesterday.
Yeah.
But then they got that sweet remake cash. Then again, I don't want to play run through this endless field picking up apples and sometimes peaches simulator.
So you haven't played
Red Dead Redemption?
That's what I worry about with Zelda, is that I feel like Nintendo, especially that team, might be like looking at the open world games that were successful 4 years ago and being like, let's do that. And it's like, no, we're already all tired of that. If I have to climb to a fucking tower in Zelda Wii U,
right,
I might lose my mind. Because I'm so excited for this game. This is whenever we've done like the hype lists on the site and stuff. It has been my top.
Really? Are you so excited about it?
I just Zelda games, man.
I'm probably gonna temper my expectations so much.
Yeah.
I loved Skyward Sword, I loved Twilight Princess, I loved Wind Waker, I loved Majora's Mask 3D, I love Ocarina of Time.
There is basically nothing I love more than console Zelda games. I will take off, like, probably 3 days off work when this comes out.
Yeah.
Like, I will sit and I will, like, turn into a gelatinous cube over the span of 3 days as I just melt into my chair playing this game. Like, I'm so, and you know, I don't care if they make me climb up a tower and collect 100 flags in the middle of a field, like, I don't care. If as long as they have that music, that overworld music, I'm set.
Andy, this is why we're friends.
Yeah.
Maybe when you get
that exact reason, it's like, I think there's a lot of bullshit in Zelda games. Like, having played Twilight Princess recently and Twilight Princess HD.
Oh, yeah. There's so much bullshit in those games.
There's a lot of bullshit in that game. But, like, those dungeons are real fun. I love the weapons. Like, the world is great. The music is fantastic. Who cares if there's nothing to do?
See, like, when push comes to shove, this is why I don't hold you any grudges for liking Federation Forces so much. There are some bullshit in every Nintendo franchise, and I'm willing to look past the ones in the franchises that I care about. So, Zelda 2016.
I just don't want that BS stretched out over, you know, a map the size of New Mexico. I liked that Skyward Sword was so tightly designed. The world was very dense. It felt big in many ways. It was actually probably a very small world compared to what we're going to get with this next Zelda. But
yeah,
everything in that world had, you know, served a purpose, whether it was visually or functionally.
And they reused
it. I don't think we're going to see that in this game.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I think it's that everybody hated Skyward. As a general rule, the reception to Skyward Sword was negative and critical. And I have a feeling that we're going to see Nintendo do kind of what they did with Twilight Princess.
Overcorrect.
Yeah, I think they're going to overcorrect.
Learn the wrong lessons.
And I don't know what those wrong lessons are going to be. With Twilight Princess, I think those wrong lessons were, we're just going to duke Ocarina of Time again, which Twilight Princess is still a fantastic game. I'm not saying anything wrong about that, but when push comes to shove, Twilight Princess is the format of Ocarina of Time
again. As long as they don't have any, I guess... If they axe the soul grape collecting stealth minigame, I'd be okay with that.
I can't.
I think it's going to be like The Witcher 3 in Zelda form.
I don't think Nintendo knows how to make
that
game.
No, they don't.
No.
But I think they're going to try.
I think Skyrim is going to be a huge influence on that game, because Skyrim was the game that came out alongside Skyward Sword that just ate Skyward Sword's lunch.
But like all of those games you're comparing it to are all Western-developed games. I don't think Nintendo has any idea how to even
begin. That's also true.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the problem.
If they try that, it's going to be strange. It's going
to
be...
Man, fuck this conversation. I went from being so hyped about Zelda Wii U to being like, it's probably going to suck.
I'm just hoping for, in the sense of an open Zelda, I'd rather just see something that's a little closer to, like, Okami.
Yeah. Except for not as long. Like, maybe have it just end the first time.
Yeah, just end halfway. Like I did when I played Okami. I'm turning off the game.
that's what I eventually did, and I now look fonder on that game, because I was just like, well, I guess I need to finish it. Nah. And, oh my god, nah.
That's an interesting angle to take. It would be cool to see a directed Zelda game rather than a more open world Zelda game. I mean, I know that's kind of been Zelda's thing since the NES, but you know, it'd be cool to see more of a story driven.
And Okami was
Zach, you should play Skyward Sword. Like, that's what Skyward Sword was a very directed game, you son of a bitch.
Skyward Sword feels like a bit of a throwback to, like, the Oracle games, where everything on the overworld was super compact, and, like, just getting around from area to area is a puzzle in and of itself. And honestly, that's not really what I enjoy about Zelda games. I really love
it. You found a raspberry. This is what a raspberry does.
Find 7 raspberries and turn them into a pouch.
It's my favorite town in a Zelda game ever.
Which town? Skyloft?
Yeah.
Oh, Skyloft is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I love Skyward Sword. And I mean, talking about that, and I remember, I don't think I actually mentioned in the review because it didn't really matter to me. One of the disappointments, kind of looking back at it more, is like the sky that you would explore that I thought would be like, oh, maybe it'll be like the ocean in Wind Waker. Like, it really wasn't. It just kind of sucked.
Yeah, it was pretty
But
bland.
For me, I got, you know, 40 hours playtime out of that game, didn't really get too much into the sky stuff, and it didn't matter.
No.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Neil.
It was a big menu.
I'll make you a promise right now. This weekend, I will restart Skyward Sword.
I'll do it with you.
And I will play through it until I can't stand it anymore.
We should
I will try to beat it.
Maybe we should motivate each other.
Let's do that.
Can we put an hourly minimum on this?
Like, it has to be minimum 10
hours.
Yeah,
so you don't just cop out and say, I can't stand this anymore.
Because that's what you did in the first place, you son of a bitch.
I beat the first dungeon, and then What's-Her-Face did her ice skating dance. And I was like, what is happening right now? But no, I actually quit because we've got something else.
At least she's not singing a song about the ocean's gray waves.
Oh, God. We'll get there soon enough.
Anyways, go Romney 2012.
Oh, I do want to say one thing about Twilight Princess HD, because you brought up Twilight Princess. I've been enjoying reading reviews of it, and watching as all the reviewers remember how horrible Ordon Village was. Because they all mention it.
You want to know something funny? Replaying it, don't hate Ordon Village as much.
Really?
Because it's not really... It's not as long and laborious as I remember.
Oh, okay. Because I remember that used to be your big knock against the game.
Yeah, because I would try to replay it and I'd get stuck there. And I think what might have helped me here is that, like, there was no stop. I was reviewing it, so I had to get past it. Yeah. So I just basically, like, just mainlined it, got through it. I mean, it's still, I think the time to first dungeon is, like, 2 hours, which is not great.
Right.
But like, it's not as bad as I remember it. Okay. It's still too long, but people like myself a couple years ago made it out to be this grave offense, and, like, you can get hung up on it, but it's not that bad. What is that bad is that, I mean, just the first three dungeons in general in that game, I think, are the worst part of the game.
Oh.
Because once you get to that back half, like, I think basically once you get to, like, Arbiter's Grounds, then that game just, it's amazing from that.
There's
to the
a
end.
Lot
I really
about
like
that.
I really like the Fire Temple.
Yeah.
Desert's great.
With the magnet.
Fire Temple is the best of those first three.
Yeah.
I think the Lakebed Temple, the water one, is okay. I think the Forest Temple is okay. I think the thing that people seem to forget of being really slow and long is the distance between the Fire Temple and the Water Temple,
mm-hmm.
between Dungeons 2 and 3. Mm. Like, that's the part that I think is the slowest and the worst. Because there's a lot of, like, where you need to, like, control a bird.
How about collecting those tears before you get into the, before you thaw? The waterfall area.
Yeah.
One of the tiers is all the way in the freaking castle. Yep. It takes forever to track it down. It's ridiculous.
And I think that's the worst part of the game.
I'm tempted to get it just to not have to worry about the waggle and the stupid people complain about the waggle, but that is nothing compared to the Wii remote noises.
That was really cool for like a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you noticed it went
away. Yeah, when you had it set up in the living room and you know everyone was like, oh wow, that's amazing. And then they make you move it from the living room because it's so damn annoying.
I will probably buy the game eventually because I buy Zelda games. It's sort of a thing that I do. But I mean, I just played the GameCube version of it like less than 6 months ago, and then I sold it to Neil.
who didn't play it and just played the Wii version.
I mean, the GameCube version is great. Like, yeah, you miss some of the little things, like the tilt control and the aiming of the arrows is a lot easier on the Wii version, but mm-hmm. GameCube version's great, and I will probably get it eventually, but I'm clearly not going to rush out and get it. But
and the Wii U one is the GameCube version, right?
Yeah.
Is it mirrored?
That's kind of why I might well get it.
I mean, the Wii U version is the best version of the game.
Is the map mirrored like the Wii version, or is it...
It's the GameCube version. If you do Hero Mode, then it's like the Wii version.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
And I mean, it's the best of both worlds, because it's... GameCube controls, but you can do like the tilting like you could do in Wind Waker, Majora's Mask, and Ocarina.
Does it even give you the option to control with the Wii Remote?
No, not at all.
Nice.
Good.
The only motion controls is like the tilting to when you're aiming in first person. That's it.
Cool.
All right. It's really good. That's also what you've been reviewing for me.
Tyler writes, just curious, do odd control schemes, speaking of odd control schemes, make a game more or less interesting to you? There's something about a game's controls bucking the trend that intrigues me. Kid Icarus Uprising being a key example of an excellent oddity. Or hell, Sakurai's work on Smash falls into the same category. Take care, Tyler, who is awesome. Hi, Tyler.
Do you think the Zelda DS games count for this?
Yeah.
I loved that.
Oh, I hated it.
And I'm having this... Oh, God, what was the... Oh, Star Fox Zero is the thing that I've been seeing people... It seems like the critiques with Star Fox Zero are just people being like, how come it's not like this thing I already played?
Huh.
That's all I can hear whenever I hear... Like, I guess, okay, yeah, people who are like, oh, the graphics aren't as good. Like, yeah, that's kind of true. It's looked a lot better since the E3 last year. But everybody's just like, I just want it to control like Star Fox 64. Is that too much to ask? And to me, I'm like... God damn it, like, try something new? And I like, even in failure, I like trying new things.
I'm with you on that, but sometimes. I feel like Nintendo's been on this crusade since 2006 to fix a problem that never was broken. Like,
I'll hear that.
It's, at a certain point, I wish they would just accept that controllers have been fine the entire time. And I think Princess HD is sort of that acceptance. I mean,
I think that Skyward Sword is the antithesis to that.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps. I mean,
Skyward Sword's combat to Wind Waker's. And which do you feel is the better system?
Skyward Sword.
Really?
Skyward Sword.
Wind Waker.
Oh, no way. I loved Wind Waker.
Why? What's so great about Wind Waker's combat?
It just felt more strategic.
I feel like Wind Waker's combat is one of the weak points of that game. There's very little to it.
Yeah, like the one cool thing about that is how you can use the grappling hook to like steal shit from mobs.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That's
great. The rest of it is just like occasionally you have the wind button that is the parry.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't think it's bad. I've seen a lot of people, especially with Twilight Princess stuff and people talking about Zelda. Like, everybody keeps on being like, well, Wind Waker is clearly the best combat. And I'm like, when did that happen?
Twilight Princess has better combat than Wind Waker.
Twilight Princess has some of the fun special moves in it. But I don't like in Skyward Sword that a lot of the combat devolves to pattern. And yet, pattern recognition is a big problem or a big component of combat in games in general, but the yeah. literal, you know, his arms are held up in this position and they're going to stay like right. that until I swing, unless maybe he switches at the last second. I just didn't enjoy that. Oh, now I have to swing up. Now I have to swing left. The movements were so broad that I just felt like it reduced the combat to something that wasn't fun.
Look, I enjoyed the combat in Skyward Sword, but then you look at something like the way the harp controlled, and that was hot garbage. Like, for all the things that Skyward Sword did really right, in my opinion, it did a lot of things. It just wasn't necessary. The controlling in the sky using the remote to sort of tilt in the direction you wanted to fly, not necessary. Just not. Nothing about that is better. That's what I'm talking about in terms of solving a problem that didn't need to be solved.
I'll always remember awkwardly flapping through the sky at E3 and the Nintendo rep saying, "You are really good at this. Wow."
Man, coming into E3 in the height of the Wii, like, that was real fun because it's just like you looking like an asshole like, at every demo. Like, Wii Sports Resort was at my first E3. And that was just you looking like an asshole in public.
Yeah, we did that chicken game.
Yeah, that was in Wii Fit.
I mean, I was a big believer in motion control through, like, maybe 2009, 2010. And I like Skyward Sword a lot, but it's 2016. Like, I'm... Yeah. Star Fox Zero, like, and Kid Icarus Uprising, like, I don't need these games to be unique. I don't need them to try to fix these problems that aren't broken.
Yeah, Kid Icarus Uprising, the ground segments of that, I felt were a mess.
Exactly.
I know you love that game, Neil, and I understand yeah. why you love that game, but I don't know. I'm ready for them to just go back to the way it used to be.
It's probably my favorite Star Fox
game. I'm old.
What, Kid Icarus Uprising? I mean, I guess what I'll say about Kid Icarus Uprising is, like, if the controls don't jive with you, that's cool. The one thing is that all the people are just like, well, if it's dual sticks, it'd be fine. Like, no. No, like, I mean, you could play that game with dual sticks, and it sucked.
Yeah.
Like, that game, I mean, you would have to substantially redesign that game to have it work with dual sticks, because it's designed with the weird trackball touchscreen controls.
I think the better answer is you don't put it on that platform.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that was the lesson from Kid Icarus Uprising.
Yeah.
I mean, it really gelled with me. I understand why the controls are super weird, and a lot of people didn't like them. Because they are super weird, but...
I just wonder if it would have been... Is it because it would have been too expensive to produce a game of the same length with the, you know, just all aerial segments? Or was the multiplayer a driving force in having those segments? I really didn't enjoy the ground missions at all.
I'm sure they
I think
just
the lesson there is Sakurai had no filter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm curious to see what Sakurai's next project's going to be, because I think part of the reason why he had such carte blanche with doing whatever the hell he wanted is because of Iwata. Mm. And I don't know if that's going to keep up with the new bosses in charge, because I think that, you know, Sakurai and Iwata went way back.
Yeah.
And that's why, if you notice, like, Sakurai left Nintendo because he was tired of the bullshit, and then he came back with Brawl, kind of seemingly as a favor to Iwata.
Yeah.
And he stuck around, you know, did Kid Icarus, then did the Smash Wii U and 3DS.
He said pretty clearly after Brawl that he was done making Smash games, right?
Yeah. And I think that was still Iwata being like, yo, bro, come on, man. Come on. Let's do it.
Sends him a text of him holding a banana.
One more. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's probably like, I would love to see that, like, that buddy movie of Iwata and Sakurai through the ages, because that would be fun.
Hell yeah. I'm in.
Really sad ending, though.
I'm probably going to play Kid Icarus Uprising tonight.
Really?
Maybe. We should all get online.
I don't have that game anymore.
I think I
Sorry.
Sold it. Yeah. I'm probably going to
well,
get
good
it.
Thing, good thing. Oh, man. Good, if... Zach, we need to find a third. Remember when we played that online like a
yeah,
year ago?
It was pretty fun.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
I like that game a lot. But Star Fox Zero, as far as weird controls, real excited for that game. Because I think those controls actually, like, work and make sense.
I'm shocked that Tyler didn't bring up Wonderful 101.
Mm.
Oh, God, that didn't work for me. I know that worked for Tyler a lot.
My philosophy is, if I can't sink into the controls quickly, I just get frustrated and don't like the game.
Yeah. And that's the risk that you run with weird control schemes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what's going to happen with Star Fox Zero, for better or worse.
Well, yep. Yeah. All right.
So let's move on to a segment that we used to do on Newscast called Whatcha Reviewin'? Except for half of us don't review video games for the website anymore. And we already talked about what I was reviewing with Twilight Princess HD. The review is on the site if you want to read it. So instead we'll start with Nathan, who's talking about a recent Nintendo game.
Sure, yeah. I'm playing Fire Emblem Fates Birthright. I own Conquest. I plan on playing through it if Birthright doesn't drive me insane first. Anyone else on the podcast playing Fire Emblem right now?
I'm on the driven insane part after playing Birthright. I got the special edition, so I have all three versions of the game. You can read my review of Fire Emblem Fates Birthright in the next issue of Nintendo Force.
Nice.
Plug. But I wasn't that hot on Birthright because I think that it's just a really simplified version of Fire Emblem, and I didn't realize that I wanted Conquest more than I wanted Birthright.
I'm kind of two minds on it. What difficulty did you play through on?
I did casual and normal.
Okay, I'm playing hard and classic right now. So a lot of the maps kind of boil down to, here's a giant field. There's a bunch of enemies. Kind of go after them. And it's kind of disappointed me in a few ways. There's a mission where you're on an island and there's a moat around you and you can fill up the moat with water. And I waited for people to... I kind of baited people into running into the moat. I fill it with water and they're just standing on the water. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, I saw you tweet about that and I was like, yup.
Yeah, I figured like, okay, the Pegasus Knights, you know, that's a wrinkle. The Pegasus Knights are going to be able to fly over. That's what I got to keep an eye out for. Nah, everyone. Everyone's okay. Nope. and a lot of the maps, they just kind of feel uninspired. I do feel like when you crank up the difficulty, and if you're not getting pissed off by the random number generator, then there are some opportunities for the challenge of moving your forces across that big stretch of land and still maintaining a strong front, trying to keep your healers and your song. I don't know what the class is called.
I think it's songstress.
That sounded dumb, so I assumed it wasn't it. But okay, your songstress in the back. That is fun. And then you get all the way to the end of a map, and then a boss that has a 2% chance to crit on you does, and like kills your favorite character.
Then
you're a little sad about it.
That's my play on casual.
Yeah, I do let people die in the game. I do find that I think it adds to it. I don't always restart. I think if you play it where you're always restarting, it's going to be a very frustrating experience. But sometimes you feel cheated by the game and you just have to do that. I don't like any of the castle stuff.
The castle stuff I thought would be really cool, and then I realized that, like, there was not much to do there except for, like, I guess get new weapons.
Right, the smithy is okay, but I feel like I can't buy enough of the materials that I need to do really interesting things there, and I don't win them in the Dawn Lottery, which is a lottery system run by my own people who are for some reason withholding good things from me and leaving it up to chance. I don't like the invasion missions. I definitely don't like all the social elements they crammed into this game. I think that there's definitely people that want that in the game. I don't feel like the game does a good job of it. And I don't think that any version of the game, even the Japanese one, I can't see how the mini game elements that were removed, or no matter what you do with the text, I don't really feel that it would end up being meaningful. You're just clicking and dragging through menus with just a bunch of really perfunctory conversations between the characters. It just feels like a chore to me. And maybe if you wanted to take the time to really micromanage all the characters, maybe it's fun, but it just doesn't, at that point, it's just too much. So I don't really enjoy the castle stuff. I am enjoying the main campaign. The story's kind of a wash for me. I'm really hoping I like Conquest more than I enjoy Birthright, because right now, like Neil said, there's not much good going on in there.
Yeah, like it's like the most basic Fire Emblem you could imagine. And my beef with it kind of boils down to two key things. One, is how every mission is just route the enemy, beat all these enemies. There's a lot of enemies.
And sounds also like the a changes... game I've been playing, Neil.
Yeah, except for, you know what? I think that Project Cross Zone 2 is a more enjoyable and possibly a better game than Fire Emblem Fates Birthright.
Wow.
I know definitely for me, I mean, I also think that Project Cross Zone 2 is like the dumbest, best thing ever. So that might be a little biased.
It is.
but with Birthright, the other thing is that I do kind of enjoy like the romantic element of it and like getting kids. Like that's like it's kind of funny to me, and I enjoy pairing off characters, especially like getting like a good 1-2 punch. Of like, you know, having like the archer with the, you know, the Pegasus Knight or something like that. And I don't like the changes that they made to the pair up mechanic, where in Awakening, granted it was probably a little overpowered as you got to the end, is you could pair up two characters and have them be on the same space, and then when you would attack, they both would attack and they would both get experience. If you do that in Fates, now there is an attacking character who does damage and gets experience. They'll have a boost from having the other person on the square, but that second person gets no experience, does no attacking.
Yeah.
The way...
Right, unless you're defending.
Yeah. And the only way that you can get that where you have the two people getting the support bonus and attacking, you know, the same time is if they're next to each other. Which, and some of the maps, like, that's just, it's kind of asinine to set up, like, do this positioning. And I know you were saying that, like, you felt it was rewarding to kind of move across the map and have, like, you know, your characters keep a strong fight, a strong front. For me, that was just really tedious because I kept on wanting to set it up. So, like, all right, these two characters were next to each other because they have the good support rank, and I can get a kid next turn.
Well, how did the benefits change when you, as far as support ranking and the benefits to defense? I feel like you have better defense when you actually pair the units, right?
Yeah, you do. But then you have to...
And that's why I tend to leave them paired, and then you have that experience gap. That's very frustrating.
Yeah.
I found that on a lot of maps, if I didn't pair up units, I was just wiped off the map.
Yeah,
very quickly.
And that's the thing is, that, and then I would have it where it's like I had one couple. It was my first people to have a child. The thief was like level 13, and his wife was like level 4.
Right.
Like and like when you get to a certain point in the game where it's like, all right, how do I even try to? I guess she's just dead weight. And that's what like kind of bugged me, is that I felt like Awakening did a much better job of that. And like you, I hope I enjoy Conquest a lot more. I'm probably not going to play it for a while. I'm planning to go back to Project Cross Zone 2 if I have the strategy edge anytime soon. So I guess that does it for Birthright. we'll skip Andy for right now because I did mention Project Cross Zone 2. And let's go to Zach. Zach, what you been reviewing?
I've been, well, on my second round playthrough of Project Cross Zone 2, I'm 76 hours into it, but that counts both play times. And just to give you some idea of how much faster the second round is going, my clear time for my first time through was 52 hours. And so now I'm on the second to last mission, and it's taken me roughly half that time. So your second round, you're crazy powerful by comparison. It's much more fun. But it's the same game. You're just going through it faster.
I don't know much about these games, the Project Cross Zone games. Can you, like, elevator pitch this to me?
So... obscure and popular characters from Capcom franchises, Namco Bandai franchises, and Sega franchises.
And some Nintendo.
And a few Nintendo and Project Cross Zone 2. All combine forces in a strategy grid-based strategy RPG against like a billion bad guys in an attempt to save the universe. And you position your units around the map, but when you actually battle, it's like a very simplified 2D fighting game where you use directional buttons and the A and Y buttons to dole out attacks. and you can call in support with L&R.
And that's the part, like, I guess kind of, I mean, I think this is very similar to Fire Emblem Fates Birth, right, specifically, because all of the missions in this are also just, like, destroy the enemy. Yeah. But with this, it's way more fun because there's a spectacle whenever you attack. Like, yes. all of these attacks that people have and the support stuff, it's just, it's fucking ridiculous.
Beautiful 2D sprite artwork.
So, for me, it's always fun to go in and attack. Yeah. Just, like, the act of attacking is fun. Whereas in Fire Emblem, like, that, like, if I'm not enjoying the strategy in Fire Emblem, then that's kind of like I'm not enjoying it that much because the attacking doesn't have that spectacle that kind of picks up the slack in Project Cross Zone 2.
And I call it a strategy RPG, but it's really not at all. Like, there's no reason you'd use Chris and Jill instead of Cosmos and Fiora.
Well, I think some of them have different powers, and you can level them up to get more...
The skills, you mean skills?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some skills, but they can often use skills on each other.
Yeah.
So, it's very loosely defined as a strategy RPG. But the real fun is the dialogue. The localization is insane.
Yep. Is the game, like, self-aware of how crazy and... Does it like, break the fourth
absolutely.
Wall?
Absolutely!
So yeah. aware.
Okay.
It breaks the fourth wall all the time. There's a scene, and you might probably have gotten to it by now, Neil. There's a scene where all these characters arrive at a castle, and Shinobi and Ryu...
And X.
Who?
And X from my
game. And X and Ryu Hayabusa, or not Ryu, some guys, Strider and some other guy, Shinobi. Strider and Shinobi and X and Morrigan from Darkstalkers all debate the best way to get up a vertical wall.
Okay.
It's very funny.
And there's even, like, the moment where, because Crom and Lucina from Fire Emblem Awakening show up, and they try to explain how, like, Lucina's his daughter.
But you're her age.
Yeah, and then, like, Crom's like, damn it, why do you always have to lead with that?
Oh, wait, like, there's I'm his daughter from the future.
Yeah.
So
And then Sagata Sanshiro, like, the ridiculous, like, the Sega character.
Yes!
Shows up.
He's the best one.
And I haven't gotten to this part yet, but I've seen a lot of screen caps, and I can't wait to get to the part with Sagata Sanshiro, he's just nonsense. And
you must play the Sega Saturn!
Yes, like, he's a meta character to begin with.
Was there any reason to go back and play the first game first, or
no?
Having done not that, really. No. The second one is there's. I guess you would be slightly lost on the ridiculous story,
no,
which is just
you
basically
really
like,
would not.
I know some shit went down.
Well, no, because Project Cross Zone 2, it turns out, cycles back to Namco X Capcom.
Oh,
it has
almost
nothing to do with the first game,
but. I mean, like, there's some character. Well, there's a lot of characters you probably won't have any idea who the hell they are. They do have a nice little, like, encyclopedia thing built into the game that you're like, who the hell is that? And you can go and, like, read a couple paragraphs.
You can spend hours reading.
Yeah. I've learned a lot about, like, Endless Frontier and more about the Valkyria Chronicles games. I'll probably get that PS4 remaster.
You got me tempted.
I'm thinking about that too.
But yeah, I mean, I think Project Cross Zone 2. Project Cross Zone 2, as it stands right now, is my game of the year.
Probably mine, too.
Wait, I'm thinking of... what was the game you guys both loved last... Etrian Odyssey 2?
Etrian Odyssey 2 Untold.
So if I were to pick, a completely, like, out-of-the-blue Japanese game that doesn't seem like something I would enjoy, but I'm kind of in the mood for it, which of those two games would you recommend?
Do you want to laugh, or do you want, like, a... dungeon crawling RPG.
One is really slow and one is really nonsense.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because, okay. I think that if you were to ask me which is the better game, it's Etrian Odyssey 2 Untold. I adore that game.
Yeah, from a gameplay perspective, absolutely.
But Project Cross Zone 2 is the most gorgeous stupidity that I've seen in a video game since, like, I don't even know. It's been a long time. Since, like, Kid Icarus Uprising, like, the script in that.
Okay. I'm gonna have to get one of those two games because I'm sure as hell not playing another Paper Mario.
Well, Andy,
just wait for Etrian 5, Andy.
Andy, I would wait for Etrian Odyssey Untold 2 to go on sale. Because yeah, it's inevitable. Been out for a long time. It's $50 right now in the eShop. It's going to go down to 20 eventually.
Yeah, it's the law of Atlas is that everything will eventually be $10 to $20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been out long enough to where that's going to happen soon. It released in Europe pretty recently, yeah. So I'm guessing in about 2 months we'll probably see it.
Summer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out last August. So
yeah, but
it's
they gave
probably,
us 2 months to review it.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Jump ahead slightly because I think we might cut off before we get to any of the news stuff that I had planned. Yeah. Etrian Odyssey 5 was announced. It's coming to Japan on August 4th, and that game looks wonderful.
Well, that's different. Well, that's different than Etrian Odyssey Untold, though, right? Different series.
Yeah.
Although, okay.
Well, it's the same series. Like Etrian Odyssey 5 is the next mainline entry. Etrian Odyssey 2 Untold is a remake of the second one, which came out on DS in like 2007 or 8.
The Untold games are basically like the Pokemon remakes with all the conveniences of the modern games.
Yeah,
I see.
But if I had to pick a favorite game in the Etrian Odyssey series, it would be 2 Untold.
I'm playing through 4 now, and I was having some issues with it, but after taking a break, I think I'm kind of back in the swing of things with that game. It's a really, really enjoyable game. It just if you play those straight through, at least for me, I start to lose interest.
Yeah, for me, I played 2 Untold over such a long burn where it was like something that like I would take breaks from it for a couple days and then come back to it. And I wound up putting like 50 hours in that game probably over the span of like a month or two.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the right way to do it.
And I enjoyed it so
much. Have you guys looked
at
the screenshots for Etrian Odyssey 5?
I mean,
the most interesting by far to me is the shot of the canyon looking environment where you have those mountains in the background, because to me that looks like a dungeon, but it's an open-air dungeon. And I don't know if that's been done before in the series. There might have been one that I'm not remembering, but that looks really cool.
Because like a lot of the early ones just have it where it's like one dungeon that you're going farther and farther into higher and higher.
Yeah, but
I think you're always going up some tree.
Well, Etrian Odyssey 4 is I think that's the first one. I never played 3 because the first one I ever played was 4.
Right.
It was just
4 has an open environment, but what I mean by this is the dungeon itself looks like there's a lot of exposed sky, which is really cool.
Yeah,
because it means you're not really in a dungeon.
Yep.
Right.
Like I can't wait for Etrian Odyssey 5. I think optimistically that could be like November in America.
What do you think the chances are of? I know they're capitalizing on the Untold games. What do you think the chances are of having the story mode already in it? I think Etrian Odyssey 4 was a step in that direction. I don't know if the story in 4. Are there more story elements in Untold 2? Because it looks like it. I haven't played Untold 2.
I only played Classic Mode in Untold 2. Zach played Story Mode.
Story Mode is like a whole story unto itself. I mean, it has a beginning and an end.
And there's cutscenes. There's story in Etrian Odyssey 4, but there's no cutscenes.
Yeah.
The story kind of seems to be a real side component of it, and it seems to be more of an emphasis in Untold 2.
Oh.
I hope they go that route with Etrian Odyssey 5 and just have a real heavy narrative throughout, and then the option for classic mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, honestly, if I with every future Etrian Odyssey game, I'd probably go with classic mode, because when I played Untold 1, and I think part of my issue with Untold 1 was I think the grimoire stone system in that game is just bad.
It is in 2,
they improved upon it in 2, but like it's still not great. But in 1, it's just horrible. And I played the story mode in Untold 1 and really didn't like it. Like, I mean, I didn't hate it, but compared to 4, Untold 1 just fell flat to me. Mm-hmm. Whereas Untold 2, I rocked classic mode and that was my favorite game in the series. So I don't even know if I had the option of story in Classic and 5. I think I might still go Classic.
Explain to me how an RPG works the outside of story mode. Because isn't an RPG entirely about
like
a story?
It's like Dragon
generally?
Quest 2.
Like classic mode is basically you create your party. It's more of like your generic adventurers who have a guild that you make, and then you make characters of different classes.
So if I play
the
demo,
story mode is you're given 5 characters, there's cutscenes, there's dialogue, whereas, like, the classic mode in Eternia Odyssey is, like, more D&D.
So if I played the demo for Eternia Odyssey 4, that's I probably played classic mode, right?
Yeah, yeah, because yeah, Eternia Odyssey 4 predates the Untold games, which those were the first ones to add the specific story.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a story, but it doesn't revolve around your characters. I mean, they could go the Dragon Quest IX route and have what I think is a great story that's totally independent of your party, outside of the main character.
Yeah.
Man, Dragon Quest IX is a great game.
It's a great game.
I would love to play it on my 3DS.
I would devour a 3DS update of that game.
Yes.
I mean, even releasing the original digitally would be great.
Yeah, but, right.
I mean that's the next step. They've remade but like every entry in the series except for 9 True. At this point.
Coming to mobile phones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably where it'll be.
Wii U Virtual Console. I'd buy it.
I don't think it would look that's how they want to do it. Your TV.
You know what, I don't think you'd have to update it to have the online elements, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
That would never happen. All right, so Andy, what have you been playing?
Well, thanks for asking. A good friend of mine who lives about an hour away from me had convinced me to pick up Diablo 3 on PS4, and I had never actually played a Diablo game before, so this was sort of a new thing for me. But I do like sort of isometric style action RPG dungeon crawlers. Like I don't know if you guys ever played the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance games on PS2 or GameCube even, I think. I played the first one probably all the way through like 3 or 4 times. I mean, it just had me completely hooked back in like 2002 or whatever, whenever those games came out. So I think I'm probably predisposed to like this kind of game, but I bought it on a PSN sale like a month ago and hadn't really had a chance to dig into it yet. And then on Friday night, my friend texted me and said, "Hey, up for some Diablo later?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So we hopped online and I think I got my character up to like level 10. And I was like, this is really enjoyable. Now that I understand like how dirt simple like the leveling up and the inventory system is, and like you get past that initial barrier, like I have a problem like picking up a new game that requires me to learn systems, like I'm resistant. Like I don't want to learn that shit. But Diablo 3 is super easy to figure out. So I enjoyed what I played enough on Friday night to fire up a new solo save with a different character class on Saturday morning, and I got about twice as far over the course of the week. I probably put about 15 hours into that game just literally over the weekend. Like, I played it almost nonstop on Saturday and Sunday.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun. It's super simple. Like, there's not much to it. It's a button masher. But the leveling up and the loot cycle it's really rewarding. And, I really do feel like every single time my character gets a new, like, weapon or a new ability, like, the game feels tangibly, like, the reward is tangible. Like, I'm like, dude, my guy kicks total ass now. Like, I have, like, a new attack, and it changes the way I feel about how good my character can handle the enemies there. It's fun. I haven't played it for a couple days. Like, I played it nonstop over the weekend, and then kind of stopped for a couple of days. So, I need to get back into it. I think maybe this weekend I might open it back up. And it even plays pretty well on remote play on Vita.
I was going to ask if you would sell your soul for a Vita native version of it.
I think the only problem with playing it on Vita is that the screen is a bit too.
Some of the text. A Vita native version would be amazing.
Oh, it would It could totally run it.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
It's not that visually intensive. That would
involve someone making a game for the Vita, though.
Yeah, Axiom Verge is coming out for the Vita very, very soon. He updated, put a blog post up.
Oh, really?
Actually.
What's coming to
Axiom Verge?
Axiom Verge, which is so good.
He kept saying he was going to put a Vita version out, and then never did. And then like a couple of weeks ago, he finally put a blog post out saying, "Hey, look, I really do intend to do this, and here's a list of the bugs we haven't figured out yet. The game is up, it is running, it is so close. I'm not giving you a date, but I promise you we are very close to releasing the Vita version."
Yeah, because there were a lot of like indie games that were announced to be PS4 Vita or PS4, PS3 Vita, and all of those Vita versions have been canceled.
Yeah. It's too bad. I think it's so good.
Axiom Verge and then Z-Boid Games, I think, what are they doing? Cosmic Star Heroine?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that like they're doubling down on there being a Vita version of that. And I think
for that.
Yeah, that game looks real good. I know that they had issues with the Vita version, but they powered through it and
Also, the online play in Diablo, pretty stellar. Like, it just, it works really well, no lag. I didn't really have any problems getting the game going, and it's a little weird to me whenever you play, like, a co-op game that's, like, part of the campaign, because there's, like, okay, well, do we both have to start a new character, or how does that really work? And, you know, I guess the way it works is you start a character, you start your game with maybe a new character, and then you invite someone in, and they pick the character they want to join with. My friend and I both created new characters and kind of...
Andy, what class are you playing in your solo game?
In my solo game, I'm playing a monk.
I kind of petered out on Diablo 3, and I'm wondering if it's because I chose a barbarian to play through as... It just got kind of boring.
Yeah, I went with a crusader, actually, in my co-op game, and that worked out well because he picked a... And I think a crusader is basically a barbarian with some paladin bonuses. But my friend is playing a wizard, so he has a whole bunch of ranged spells, and I have, like, close-up giant hammer attacks.
Yeah, I've heard that Witch Doctor is... Well. I've heard that Witch Doctor is supposed to be a lot of fun to play solo.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. This is a game I could probably see myself, like, finishing all the way through and then just picking another character class and doing it again, because it's kind of a zen experience. Like, it doesn't really matter what the story is, it's just... Oh, you have a map? I'm going to scour every corner of it and kill all the things and take all the stuff. And then I'm going to go to the next map and I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go to the next map and I'm going to do it again. Like, it doesn't really matter if you're at the beginning of the game or the end of the game, because the cycle is the same no matter what part of the game you're at. You know, you have a character, you want to make it cooler, so you just play the game until your character is cooler, and then you want to play the game more to make your character even cooler. Like, I get that loop has existed on a lot of other games. I never got hooked on Monster Hunter 4. I tried, but the game was too complicated for me. There's too many systems and too much to learn. The game doesn't do enough to hold your hand through it. I'm sure it's really rewarding once you figure it out. I don't have the patience for it.
Have you tried out the Borderlands series?
Very, very little. I've played a little
That's great. I'm playing through Borderlands 2 on Vita right now. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Diablo could not make it easier to get in there and have fun with it. So I'm really digging it. The other thing that I've been playing is I picked up a Retron 5 a couple of days ago.
Cool.
Which is a silly thing for me to do because I don't want to collect cartridges. Here I am collecting cartridges again. I've sold off my collection and then I bought more and then I sold off my collection. I have this loop where every like 4 to 5 years I decide I'm a video game collector again. And then every 4 to 5 years after that, I sell all my shit. But I uncovered this really cool used game and kind of retro toy store, like 80s and 90s toy store in my town. And they were selling a Retron 5. And I was like, it was like $100 used. So I picked it up and picked up a copy of Mario All-Stars to go along with it. And it's nice. I mean, it's an emulation box, so it's not like perfect, but it's good enough as far as I'm concerned. And on my HDTV, it looks gorgeous. It makes these games a lot more playable on an HD modern television than, quite frankly, they would be on original hardware. And I realize you can mod that hardware and, you know, get better output like via a FrameMeister. But I mean, seriously, I don't care quite that much. I will say the hardware itself feels way cheaper than I was expecting.
Oh, it's really? About that was my takeaway from it. I have a friend actually, Alex from Third Rate Minion, who wrote earlier. He brought over his Retron 5 at one point, and it felt like it was like a fucking toy.
Yeah, like it is. It has the weight of a.
Yeah. That's what I was gonna say.
But like a cheap toy.
It has the weight of a half empty shoebox. Like,
oh, you know, wow.
It just feels like you could throw the thing halfway across the neighborhood.
Feels like there's only one shoe.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like there's only one
shoe.
Feels
like there's just like one tiny chip just running a bunch of emulators on
basically,
it.
Basically, yeah. Like the hardware of it really is the plastic that is on the outside and the cartridge slots. Everything else is basically could be on a Raspberry Pi as far as anything else is concerned. It's a console on a chip. The front end feels a little bit, I don't know, it's not polished. It doesn't feel like a polished interface. It's not terrible, but it gets the job done. The built-in, the controller that it comes with functions. I don't think it's not comfortable and it's not attractive and it's a weird shape. But I picked up the store that I went to also had a like a like a clearance bin of $2 GBA in Game Boy Color games.
Oh,
and I was like, this feels like the best place to buy a game for my kid to play. Because she's starting to get into games just a little bit. And so I went through the box and I got some Dora game for $2. How can you go wrong? So I actually gave her the wireless controller that came with it because it's a freaking 4-year-old playing a Dora game. She's not looking for perfect input. And if I gave her the Super NES controller that I also bought from the store, she would pull it off of the entertainment center because the cord's not that long and the system has no heft to it. But I mean, it's good. I like the filtering effects are nice. I kind of turned most of them off except for on GBA games. I don't like that it doesn't allow you to save filter settings per console. So you have to turn it off for the systems you want it off for and turn it back on for the systems you want it on for, which is a little dumb. I'm a little concerned about like the battery backup thing. So when you put a cartridge in, it immediately like copies the save file from the cartridge to its own internal memory, which is great. But it doesn't necessarily always copy the data back unless you tell it to. So when I first got the system, I put in Mario All-Stars, it loaded the save data, and that was fine. And I played through like a couple of stages of Mario 2. And then I actually updated the firmware of the thing just to see what all options it had on the later firmware. And then I put Mario All-Stars in there again, and it re-imported the save, which effectively means it overwrote the save that it had on the local memory. That's not good because I wanted to keep the progress that I had made. And so I'm a little uncertain why it did that. I'm guessing it has to do with the firmware update, but that's a little concerning. Like if I'm going to play an RPG on this thing, I have to be very like clear that my save file is not going to get overwritten by like an older version that happens to still be on the cartridge. Yeah. So that's a little concerning. They actually did have both Shining Force games, 1 and 2 for Genesis at the store for like $30 and $35 a piece. And I gotta tell you, I'm super tempted to go spend $75 or $65 on 2 16-bit RPGs that I loved when I was a kid. It just seems I have both of them on Wii Virtual Console. I don't know why I would be doing this, but
don't do it, Andy.
Nathan's shaking his head over there.
Don't do it, Andy.
That's the problem, man.
I know, right? I might get
you can,
to it.
You can play the games already, right?
Tax return. I don't need this. I don't know. It's fun. I'm glad that I have it. I don't know that I'm gonna. I told myself this is the thing that I'm gonna do. I'm only gonna buy games on cartridge that I can't buy on Virtual Console, like licensed games or sports games or things that have no hope of ever being re-released. So what did I do? I bought Mario All-Stars. It's a collection of games that I own 7 copies of each. But oh well.
But isn't your new copy plus World?
No, it's just Mario All-Stars, regular Mario All-Stars. I
saw that on Twitter somewhere.
I think Adam replied on Twitter and said that my copy would be better if it was that, I think, said.
Okay. I mean, it would be.
But the one thing that Mario All-Stars gives you that it's not easy to come across is the 16-bit graphical versions of those games.
Yeah.
You can get those in the GBA remakes, but those are GBA copies. And Nathan, I heard you. You're not wrong. You're not right either, but you're not wrong. Like I could buy the GBA versions of Mario 2, but then I'd have
to put up with that. You could buy tomorrow or what is it, Friday? I don't know what the hell day it is anymore.
The Selects,
the Nintendo Selects. You get Super Mario All Stars on a Wii.
I
disc
can't
for
believe
bucks.
That's part of that platform. Can we talk about how stupid that is? That's the stupidest thing in the world. That's one of their games they're re-releasing. Come on.
How much did you spend on Super Mario All Stars on Super Nintendo?
$25.
You could have gotten it for $20 on a Wii disc.
Yeah, but that defeats the purpose of buying a Retron, I guess. And the purpose of buying a Retron is
regret.
I don't know. I bought RC Pro-Am, and I bought Mario All Stars, and I bought NBA Jam on Genesis. And I bought
DuckTales. Did you get DuckTales?
They did not have DuckTales. I would have bought it if they did. I absolutely would have bought it if they did.
Andy, these games will not make you happy.
No, that's fair. And then I bought. I got a Spider-Man game for Game Boy Advance that I haven't played yet. And Dora. Gotta have Dora. And I happen to have a copy of Wizards and Warriors 2 Iron Sword on NES, which has not ever been re-released.
What even is that game?
Wizards and Warriors, man. Those games were fine back in the day.
Were they rare games?
Yeah, they were.
I think they were.
Are they on Rare Replay?
No, they are not.
Well, there you go.
RC Pro-Am
That's
where
I have there you go. You justify your retro.
That's right.
RC Pro-Am is on Rare Replay,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
So there's a failure on your part. RC Pro-Am, kind of fun for like 10 minutes.
Yep. That is the MO of that game.
Yeah, RC Pro-Am 2, also fun for about 10 minutes.
I don't know if I'll have an Xbox One anytime soon, so if I see Cobra Triangle, I will probably also buy that on NES.
Cobra Triangle, fun for like 15, 20 minutes.
I played all the way through that game to the bitter end with the Game Genie on New Year's Eve.
I feel like I would need that.
It's very tough.
That's how I beat Battletoads back in the day.
Yeah,
that's another game that I will likely not beat on Rare Replay. Yeah. So my what you reviewing is the Xbox One. So there was this deal on Best Buy. I was up late playing a board game. This game called Star Wars Imperial Assault. That very fun, kind of like a D&D-ish board game where it's my board game. So I'm the Imperials playing against four of my friends.
This is that game that you can hear on that episode of Xanstars. Episode four that
might go up before this. I don't know. I need to edit it. But anyway, Star Wars Imperial Assault, very good. But the key part there is that I was up very late playing that, and I checked my phone before I went to bed. And Wario64 on Twitter posted this link to this Best Buy bundle of Xbox One that was for, including tax and shipping and everything, was like $310, and it came with a $400 laptop. And what? Xbox One with a free game and a $50 gift card.
That's insane.
What?
So I looked at it and I was just like Lauren was still up. So I was like, I know we kind of don't really have, like, the reason why I don't have an Xbox One is because we bought a house and we don't have any fucking money.
Yep.
And I was just like, but like, this deal is too good to pass up.
Yeah.
So she's like, yeah, fine, do it. So I did it, expecting it to like wake up in the morning and have it be canceled. And like Best Buy being like, oh, there was a price error. Woke up the next morning, nothing happened. The next day it ships. I get it the day after. And so I have an Xbox One.
Did you get the laptop too?
Yeah, and we got the laptop. That's now my wife's laptop. Oh, but it's a pretty solid laptop. And the issue was that, like, why it was priced like that is that it was like, I think it would like should have been like $600 or $650, but it was $250+ in savings. So it went up as the savings as opposed to the actual price.
Weird.
Oh, and I think that was the issue.
How long did the bundle last?
It lasted for like an hour or two before it got just taken down.
That's crazy.
But yeah, so the Xbox One, I got a Rare Replay. It was the bundle where you could like pick one of four games, and I went with Rare Replay, which I've been really enjoying. I've been playing through Blast Corps and just kind of going around and dicking around with the older games, most of which aren't that great, but it's kind of like there's this one called Gunfright that I've been enjoying, where it's like this weird isometric game as were all European games from like 1980 to 1986, where you're going around and trying to look for some like a wanted criminal that you're trying to shoot while it looks like you're just mowing down like women and children, which is kind of fucked up, but the game's kind of fun. But I've been playing Blast Corps, which is awesome. That game is fantastic. I also downloaded Killer Instinct, the new version of it, and I haven't spent any money into that, but they have like, there's like a free character and you have access to a good chunk of the game. That game's awesome.
Oh, yeah?
So much better than every other Killer Instinct game. Huh. I also got Rock Band 4, which after like the 3 days it took me to import all of my old downloadable content, it's really fun to play Rock Band again. I've been enjoying the Xbox One a lot.
I need to get one.
Across those couple games. The interface is kind of not great, although I've gotten used to like where I have to go to do the things that I want to. Like, all the entertainment stuff on it looks just hopelessly confusing. So the PS4 will probably still be my media center of choice.
Certainly not the gaming center of choice right now.
I had an Xbox One for like a month, and then I sold it.
Why did you sell it?
There wasn't enough to interest me on it. The only console I have now is the Wii U. I had a PS4.
I say
you had
a PS4 too, right?
Yeah, I also got rid of that. I just don't have enough time to.
That's what, like, the PS4. I'm very. I don't know what my future with the PS4 will be.
It'll be Ratchet and Clank this month.
Yeah. No. I mean, I probably won't get that at launch, but I'll play that down the line. But the PS4, like, I. I don't really like PS Plus anymore.
No. Really?
So when it expires, I think I'm done with it too. Because I just realized that, like, I'm not playing any of those games. They just sit there. And there's going to be, like, if I let it lapse, then there's probably, like, Rocket League's a free game that I might actually buy after my PlayStation Plus subscription lapses. And I think there might be a couple other games that I got for free that I'd probably rebuy when that was done. But it's just that I don't see the point in paying for it anymore if I'm just downloading the games to never play them again.
At this point, I'm paying for it more for...
Between DS, Vita, Wii U, and a modest gaming PC, I have enough games to play until I die.
Yeah.
Like, I do. Yeah.
Me too.
So, I mean, probably just be like, here's a DS, and I'd be set
It's just
life.
Overwhelming, and I think I had too many games. I still do have too many games, and that's part of why I got rid of the Xbox. And there just wasn't enough compelling stuff that I couldn't get on my computer.
Right.
For me, I guess two of the three games that I listed, which are a lot of my motivation for wanting to get an Xbox, I guess Rock Band 4 is now coming to PC, but my DLC wouldn't be coming to PC. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, like, I'm so happy playing Rock Band 4. I've kind of missed that game, and there's a lot of new DLC that's come out in the interim. After I kind of have fun going through all my old DLC, then I'll probably go ham with that. And Rare Replay, I'm really enjoying. I'm curious to see whatever Sea of Thieves, the new Rare game, turns out to be, if it doesn't get canceled before it comes out, like Fable Legends. Which was a game that, like, the sad thing about Lionhead being shut down with Fable Legends is that the day before I was like, I wonder when Fable Legends is going to come out. That might be a fun thing to check out now that I have an Xbox One. And then it got canceled the next day. But there's, like, I think Quantum Break looks fun. I'm going to get Ori and the Blind Forest when the Definitive Edition comes out on Friday. And I think for me, like, I could get a bunch of these games on PC, but I don't really like playing games on PC.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not cost effective, but, like, I like having consoles.
I have an Alienware Alpha gaming PC console type thing. I love it. I took the guts out of my old laptop, kind of crammed some of them in there, and it's smaller than any console I own, and it's more powerful than any console that I own.
Wow.
So and it was very cheap, you know, especially when you compare it to the cost of a console and the kind of the breadth of games you can play on it. I'm a huge fan of it. But yeah, I do enjoy the ease of use of the console experience.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at. And I don't mind being there. But yeah, the PS4 I keep on looking at, and I'm just like, what am I going to do with you? Because most of the games that I really enjoyed playing on the PS4
are on other systems.
I can also get on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
And my issue is that my PS4 has, depending, certain games just fucking crash all the time on my PS4 because I have a launch window one. And I looked up, like, I'm out of warranty, so I'd have to, like, pay $150 to get it repaired. So my PS4 is kind of in this weird stasis where, like, if I go to play I can't play Rocket League anymore on the PS4 because it just crashes, like, randomly.
Oh.
And I actually, I'll give a shout out to the dudes who make Super Mega Baseball, which is this probably the best baseball game that I've played in 10 years, easily. It's an arcade baseball game that has the feel of like a sim, but not like an overbearing feel of a sim. Like it's so good, but that kept on crashing for me, and that does the crap with like Mario Strikers, where like if you quit out during a match, then it counts you as losing it. And I was playing a season mode where I would lose, and then I'd go back to the season mode and be like, you lost this game. I'm like, son of a bitch. But I actually got into a conversation with the developer, and you can do the thing on the PS4 where you have a crash. You can send the error report to the developer.
Oh.
And they actually worked with me and troubleshot it. And their conclusion was like, yeah, man, this is your console. This has nothing to do with our game.
Oh, God.
Shit. I'm dealing with that. But I'll probably just rebuy Super Mega Baseball on Xbox One.
Well, I just got my PS4 like a couple of months ago, and I love it. Honestly, I don't have an Xbox. I have the PS4, and I'm all in. Mainly, I'm all in for the Uncharted games. I played the first two on the collection, and I'm super excited about Uncharted 4. Eventually, when Last Guardian comes out, like that's the game that I bought my PS3 for. Fucking 7 years ago. So I'm gonna,
that was probably
gonna
not
buy
an episode
that.
Of Newscast.
I don't know that I'm excited about it all that much anymore, but I'm gonna buy it because shit. I mean, I have to kind of.
Yeah, no, I'll totally check out Last Guardian. Like, there's enough on both systems that like I don't feel like any of my purchases for them.
Yeah.
Feel worthless. Like the Xbox One, like there's a back catalog that I'm excited to check out. I also got Sunset Overdrive. It was cheap on Amazon. I installed that, which took about 4 days.
Oh, that's the crappy thing about the Xbox One. Plastic wrapping off then?
Yeah. That's the crappy thing about the Xbox One is that everything takes forever and a day to install.
Oh, really?
I mean, honestly,
forever.
I'm paying for PS Plus now more than anything else for the online play component of it, because I'm with you on the Instant Game Collection has not had a title that I care about in close to a year, at least.
Yeah.
I'm playing
and that's
the Diablo 3 experience that I had last weekend, and I'm part of a Madden league that seems to have stalled right now, but that's worth the online fee, honestly. And PS Plus is a little cheaper than Xbox Live. But if I had to give up all of those PS Plus games, my PS3 hard drive would be pretty empty. Actually, I have I put a 500 gig drive in my PS3, and that filled up pretty quick. And
and the kind of cool thing about PlayStation Plus, even with all the games that I'm not playing, is that all the stuff that you downloaded, if you were to cancel and then go back to it like in a year, all the stuff that you downloaded when you had it the first time should still be available.
Yeah.
So like, even if I were to go cold turkey, if I were to like somehow cancel it right now, and then get it in a month, then all the stuff that I'd previously downloaded
it's attached to your account. It just has like an expiration date on the executable. Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah, I can't wait until I get all those things cleared off my Vita.
I'm not even sure how many Vita games I actually own. It can't be more than 4.
See, a lot of my stuff I got from sales. I'll actually be curious when I do cancel the PlayStation Plus about how many games I actually bought on sales versus got.
Is
from
there
PS
an
Plus
easy
games.
Way
know.
To know that? How do you even know
no
what
idea.
You actually
I have no
own?
Idea.
Oh, you know but what? You can. I think you can hold on the game in the selection menu, and I think it shows an expires date on it.
Yeah, but like, what if you don't have it currently on your system? What if you're looking at a download list of games you have on your account?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably I'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, let me know.
Do you know what else has expired?
What's that?
This episode. Yeah, we're talking about non-Nintendo stuff. So thank you everybody for sticking with us to listen to this Newscast reunion. I guess we'll see you in another 100 episodes. if not, maybe 250. I don't know. Maybe we'll do it more regular.
At the very least, when the rest of us move twice.
Yeah. When the rest of us move twice, or we get to another round number, we'll be back. You'll know where to find us.
Yep.
But thank you so much for celebrating Connectivity 200 with us, or as I like to call it, Newscast 269.
471. One of the two.
Yeah. This is Newscast. Thank you, Andy, Zach, and Nathan, for joining me again. I miss you guys.
Lovely as always.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Hello, Newscast. I'm not sure whether this will make it to the Newscast, but I figure, why not ask some questions I'm sure we've all asked before.
I think Nathan, you missed part of this, is that we were cutting it down to one of the four questions.
Numero tres, right?
Yeah.
Well, shite. We can just edit that out, because...
hey, Nick, edit this out.
There's only two questions here.
Okay.
There's one question. One question.
I see two questions.
Never mind. That used to be all under bullet point 3, that's all.
Oh, so I could have just kept reading and everything would have been okay.
Damn it, I'm sorry. I don't have an updated document.
Oh, Jesus.
Alex writes.
Yeah. I'm a 鉄人だ 今時
Hey everyone, so now we're going to jump into a listener mail segment. We're going to be pretty short, probably. We only have sort of one question and one experience, I guess. So, Adam, we got some emails.
Woo! Yeah, we got some emails. They can finally come out of the dungeon.
So, do you want to take the first one from NintyFan87?
Sure. Alright, so NintyFan87 writes, so here is my story about Pokemon Yellow and Pokemon Stadium. My older brother was trying to beat the cups in Pokemon Stadium. I think it was the Pika Cup or Petite Cup. You only had level 15 to 20 Pokemon that you can use. My older brother would always struggle and lose against the last two trainers. I decided to help him out because I wanted to get the Dodrio Game Boy. I caught a Lapras and taught him Surf, Blizzard, Thunderbolt, and Recover, I think, but for sure the first three moves. I trained Lapras to level 20. We picked Lapras to use all the time, and he absolutely destroyed everyone, until the last trainer. He threw out Dragonair, his last Pokemon, and we threw out Lapras. We used Blizzard, and it missed! Of course, his Dragonair had Thunderbolt. We used Blizzard again, and it missed, and he used Thunderbolt again. Somehow, we were still alive. We used Blizzard, and it finally hit him, and he fainted in one shot.
Pretty epic-sounding battle, I guess.
Yeah, I just want to say, I hated those cups so much because they used strategy, and my strategy in Pokemon was always to cheat and get all my Pokemon to level 100.
Yep.
And you can't, it doesn't really help you out in Pokemon Stadium.
I own Pokemon Stadium now, but I didn't own it until recently, basically, and so I've never played through the battles in that game. So I might have to try it eventually.
Yeah,
the game's like so slow though now. I put it in a little bit just to test it out, and it's like the selecting the moves and then the animation's all really slow. Like, it looks alright, but it's probably going to get irritating at how slow it moves.
Yeah, I was pretty mad at I went back to Omega Ruby recently, and I was like, "Damn, these battles are so slow." And then I realized that I had the animations turned off. So I had the battle animations turned off. So like they weren't even like using their moves. They were just standing there taking damage. And still I felt that it was too slow. Because there's the animation of like throwing out your Pokemon. And then they're like, Pika! And then they throw out their Pokemon and they stand there for a while. I don't know. Yeah. And you have to watch them faint. Ugh. It was really bad in Stadium, though. They were, like, so overdramatic. They would, like, stumble around and put their hands on their heads, like, oh, no. And then faint.
He had the announcer. Squirtle used Hydro Pump. You know, like...
Oh, my God, I forgot about the announcer. I want him to announce my life.
Adam entered a room.
Adam sat in his chair. Wild. Adam is still sitting in his chair.
Alright, so, yeah, well, we'll move on to the second and last question, I suppose. Now, this is a pretty long one, so we have cut it down a bit, but, I guess, yeah, I might cut it down a little more as I'm reading it, but we'll see how we go. So this is from Scars No More. Hey guys, I haven't written in a while, but I still enjoy listening to the show. I miss Josh's awkward jokes and humour. I always lose my composure listening to him rant with Kim and Becky. I can't believe he hasn't podcasted in such a long time. Anyway, I really enjoyed the Pokemon discussion. I started my trainer journey with Pokemon Yellow and a teal Game Boy Color for my 10th birthday. I could not believe that Pikachu was following me around and that all the Pokemon looked so great. I remember vaguely playing Gold, but never beating it. I skipped Ruby and Sapphire because I didn't have a GBA then. Then I remember getting excited for Diamond and Pearl and getting that when the game came out. I lost so much time mining for no reason. I fell off track with Black and White and didn't hop on X and Y as I felt I was past Pokemon. You never pass Pokemon. No one really gets over Pokemon.
We're all 10 forever.
Then I got Pokemon
Trozai? I don't know.
It's not the greatest Pokemon game, but it got me interested again when I couldn't recognize half of the Pokemon. Then my wife really got into Pokemon Mobile Blast. We picked it up for something like $8. She said that she remembers really liking Pokemon and we should play a Pokemon game together. I purchased Omega Ruby for myself and got Alpha Sapphire for her. We were on par for some time, but then she stopped playing and I made it all the way to the last gym and beat it. Then I kind of fell off the wagon again. I can't bring myself to face the Elite Four. I feel like the game will definitely be over by then, and my wife will probably be a little mad that I didn't wait for her. Yeah, it's probably a little too late.
Yeah, you a lot farther than she is.
Then Nintendo goes on to announce Sun and Moon with very little information. I want to know more so that I can see if I can get my wife hyped about it again. It would be nice to get into it again. I have a question for you guys. Seeing as there has been little information about the game and so many rumors, what would be the best thing for you guys to see in the new game? I heard a rumor that this game was supposed to be bringing it all together and that all the regions could be in the same game. Wouldn't that be crazy? Going back and forth in the regions and facing different gyms and the Elite Four, and then face Red at the very end of it all, where he meets you and says, "I've been expecting you." And then you have an epic battle, only to wake up and realize that it was all a dream and you have to do it all over again. That's too cruel. Just beat Red and you get it all over with. Also, would they add more Pokemon? Do you think we have another 100 Pokemon coming our way, or just a few? I'm starting to lose track of the amount of Pokemon. P.S. I'll take a Mew code if you still have them. Lol. I don't think we do we?
No, we're all out. I'm sorry.
P.P.S. Adam, I started playing Ingress. I'm not a big fan.
Well, you need someone to take you out and play Ingress. You can't play by yourself. You have to get out in the community, find the Google Plus community for your area, and there will be people playing Ingress, and they will show you how to play Ingress.
So, as for Sun and Moon, what do we think? Do we think there's going to be some crazy multi-region epic, or not really?
I really want it to have all the regions, and the regions from the GameCube games, and like the Orange Islands, and all the Battle Frontiers. Like, I want it to have everything, but I don't think it's going to.
It seems unlikely that they're going to have everything in every single region.
Unless they've been working on this for a really long time. Because, like, X and Y were kind of bare and empty.
Mm.
And there was just nothing to do. So if they started around that same time making this game, then maybe it could have all the regions. But then I'd feel really mad because I just paid, like, $40 for Hoenn. And if they're going to give me all the regions for $40, like, I would be pissed.
Well, if it was all the same, if it was, if they brought Hoenn into Sun and Moon, say, like, it's not going to be Ruby and Sapphire. It's just going to be that landmass, maybe, like, a little bit in the future or something. So it would be different, like, experience, I guess. But
yeah.
As for other new stuff, what would be interesting to see in Sun and Moon?
I don't know if X and Y and Oris had day-night cycles, but I feel like this one will probably have day-night cycles, just because it's Sun and Moon.
Yeah. They probably added the day-night cycles in Ruby and Sapphire, didn't they?
No, I don't even know if X and Y had day-night cycles. Like, I feel like it was only Gold and Silver.
No, I'm pretty sure it did.
I don't know.
Yeah. Pretty sure it had day and night again.
I know they like to do days of the week.
Mm.
Which that is always really annoying. Like, you can only catch Scyther on Tuesdays.
They're going to extend that out to being like Animal Crossing, so it's a real calendar year.
Oh, they did that kind of in Black and White, where every month was a different season.
Yeah, that's right. Mm.
I remember the last day of winter, my friends and I all went to that ice mountain and tried to catch Cryogonal, because he was the last Pokemon that we needed for our Unova Pokedex. And there was like a 2% chance of finding him in the winter and like a 1% chance of finding him not in the winter. So we were like, oh, we're never going to find him if we don't catch him in the winter. So we definitely made sure to catch him. But for new Pokemon, I don't know how many new Pokemon we're going to get. Because X and Y only had like 40 new Pokemon or something. And then they added
Megas. It'll probably be like, they'll probably lean on adding more Mega Evolutions again, maybe. Along with some new Pokemon.
And I don't really like Mega Evolutions. Like, I feel like some Pokemon still need normal evolutions.
Mm.
And they don't all need Mega Evolutions.
Yeah, I don't really like the whole Mega thing. Like, it's okay, I guess, but I don't know. Part of me thinks it just sort of cheapens the whole Pokemon, like, feeling a bit. It makes it feel a bit more like Digimon or something.
Oh, well, there's a rumor that this new one is going to have, like, fusions with people.
Like that. I hope not. I really hope not. That's probably going to go too far for me.
It sounds awful.
Fusing. Yeah, there was a rumor going around that was, like, Pokemon and humans are going to be able to fuse together or something, right? So maybe your trainer and your Pokemon can morph into some sort of crazy Pokemon.
Well, there's the Ash Greninja that has, like, markings that are similar to his hat or something. So I wonder...
That's in the anime.
Right.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's going to be... Like, if they're going to take away outfits. And they just give you one outfit. Because otherwise they'd have to figure out what every Pokemon looks like when it's fused with every different outfit.
So then they basically already took away the outfits in Ruby and Sapphire.
Well, Ruby and Sapphire didn't have outfits to start with.
Yeah, so... They added other new stuff. I mean, it's not like... It would have been difficult for them to add some clothes options again.
But those are iconic outfits, man. Brendan and May, like, oh my gosh.
Didn't they change how they looked in the 3DS versions anyway? The characters didn't look exactly the same anyway.
I don't know. I don't remember what they looked like. I just remember that they were iconic, man. Wait, was Brendan in the anime?
No.
No, I think he was.
I think so.
Or was he like an asshole that was mean to May and also wanted to be like a...
Maybe he did turn up, the character design did turn up in an episode or two. I can't remember.
I don't remember either. That's important. But yeah,
I thought May was cool in the anime and stuff.
I never understood why people liked May so much. I liked Max.
She was also voiced by Veronica Taylor, Ash's voice actor.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh man, who did Max?
I don't know. I don't know.
It'd be great if she did Max, too.
I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't think so. It's probably stretching it a bit too far to have her voice three of the current main characters.
Man, it would have been great if she took over Brock in the Pokedex. And it was just Veronica Taylor, her mini personalities, on a Pokemon journey.
What do you think about... going back to, like, ideas for what we... would like to see in like a new Pokemon game. An idea I had ages ago was to make it, they should maybe consider doing like one version has, make it sort of like Oracle of Ages and Seasons. So there's two distinct regions on each like version. So then you could like, I don't know, do like a password swap or, you know, transfer your data over to the other version and continue the adventure. It'd be like, having two regions, but split across the two different cartridges.
You know, I don't know if they'd do that. I like that idea, though. I could see them doing that with the other regions, where, like, in Sun, after you beat it, you get, like...
Kanto, and then Moon gets, like, one of the later ones or something. Like, I don't know.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. It would just make people, you know... want to buy both versions even more, I guess, but
yeah,
I wouldn't mind having I know X and Y had a lot of Pokemon, but I wouldn't mind having like just sort of two versions, like the next two versions that come out just have everything catchable in between those two versions, you know, just to make it simpler.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I remember when Ruby and Sapphire came out, I was so upset because you could only catch like 200 Pokemon, but there were like
219, I think, or something.
But there were like 300 Pokemon at the time, Yeah. So it was like, how am I supposed to get the rest of these? And then he found out you had to buy Fire Red and Leaf Green. Or trade with Colosseum and XD.
But like, that was like a few years later. That was... Red and Green came out in like 2006.
I know, Ruby it was Sapphire like a...
Sapphire came out in 2003 or something. Yeah, 2003.
It was like a dirty trick that they made us do that.
I didn't catch them all anyway. I haven't caught all the Pokemon since Red and Blue, even though I've said at the start of each generation, oh yeah, I'm going to catch all of them. And it just keeps getting harder and harder.
I usually catch all of the local Pokemon.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I have the other ones, so I have caught them all in my lifetime, but maybe not on this cart.
Yeah.
Most importantly, how is he going to get his wife hyped about this game? If it coming all together doesn't hype her up, then, like, is she a lost cause?
You know, people go through... Do you say how far she got? She got, like, a little way in, right? So, I don't know. My girlfriend, Talia, also started X when it came out, and she's only got, like, 2 or 3 badges.
Oh, my gosh.
She keeps saying, oh, I want to go back, but I just haven't got around to it. It's just like, yeah, busy even doing other stuff. But
and you, how long have you guys been dating?
Like 8 years.
8 years, and she only has 3 badges? Man, she does not have enough.
The game only came out a few years ago, though. It's not like it came out 8 years ago.
She does not have enough badges to train you, Nick.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Sun and Moon... I guess I'm excited about it a little bit. I guess we need to find out a bit more information. I would like to see some footage and some plans of what they're thinking about. But I'm not really in the Pokemon mood too much at the moment. Like for some reason, with like Pokemon and stuff, I really need to be in like that. I don't know, some sort of feelings like it's Pokemon time. But I haven't felt like that for a while, so I'm not sure.
I want it to have something to do after you beat the Elite Four. I want it to be in 3D and at least 10 frames a second. You know, no more of this 5 frames a second bullshit that we've been getting. Like, come on. I have a new 3DS.
Yeah, really.
It has
really
zero games for it. Like, it would be nice if it worked, like, ran okay on the new 3DS.
I really hope that they've improved the engine a lot. Since X and Y, so it runs. Yeah, it runs smoothly. It might even have 3D in the overworld. Maybe, probably not. But
now the NX is supposed to come out this fiscal year, so it should be out before it seems March. Like
rumors are pointing towards probably.
No, that's what they said in there at the year end from 2015 in March. That year end of 2016. Wait, no, it's not the end of the year yet. Anyways, they said that next year the NX was going to be a big part of their sales.
It'll probably, at least something about one of the NXs or whatever will probably come out around Christmas time, I'd imagine. It just seems like it's going to happen. If it's like a handheld sort of thing, it would be nice if, I don't know, Pokemon... did something to run good better on that, or offered some extra functionality or unlocked something.
And what if it doesn't run at all? Like, what if it doesn't have 2 screens? Like, there was that, they patented that, like, donut circle device. That would not play 3DS games.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, are they going to try and maintain 3DS backwards compatibility going forward with the NX? It might be too difficult just to... Or the experience is just going to be so compromised, you're not going to really want to. Like, if it was, like, one screen, I guess it could probably display the 2 3DS screens, like, inside that, but it's not very ideal.
I guess we'll have to wait.
Have to wait and see. Wait till E3.
At least. I don't know. I have a feeling they'll announce it like a week before it comes out. Like they do with eShop games. They'll be like, you can go download the NX update to your 3DS right now. Oh, by the way, I think the NX is just a software update. Everyone is talking about hardware. I think it's a software update.
The NX isn't really a platform. It's like it's a digital platform. So the Wii U and 3DS get turned into the NX.
Yeah, and you can install it on your phone, and you can play like Mario versus Donkey Kong right there on your phone on the NX platform.
Oh, yay, the more minis, yay.
Exactly.
Anyway, we've gotten fairly off track, I guess, but...
Always, always.
Thanks to Scars No More and NintyFan87 for sending something in for us to chat about. If you'd like to send in an email to Connectivity, please do at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com or follow us on Twitter, which is @connectivitynwr. So thanks, Adam, for having a chat with me.
Oh, well, if you don't mind, I do have a pretty big announcement to make.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
Nintendo World Report is playing through Paper Mario! So if you want to play with Paper Mario, or play Paper Mario with us, you can go to the site. We have a thread there. On social media, we're using #NWRGameClub. There are 4 Paper Mario games, and right now we're playing the first one for Nintendo 64. And God only knows what we'll feel like playing after that. But it's really exciting, because Paper Mario, this is the first time I've ever played it. But keep your eyes on the site and maybe on this feed, and you might hear a bunch of stuff about Paper Mario all the time.
Paper Mario. There will be a free demo put out on the site too. You know, just you can cut it out yourself and print it out yourself.
A picture of Paper Mario.
That was like their marketing for Paper Mario and like magazines and stuff. It just had a picture of Paper Mario with like a dotted outline and it said free demo or something.
You know, I have a giant sticker of Paper Mario from Sticker Star. Mm. And I always wanted to put it up, but I did not like Sticker Star. But you'll have to wait to hear what I think about Sticker Star, because that might come up someday.
That's going to take a while, I'd imagine.
Yes, they're very long games.
Mm. All right, cool. So thanks again, and we'll go into the next segment.
Woo!
To the final segment of this episode 200 of Connectivity. We are going to end the show on the Themesters segment. Today we are going to be playing Pokemon music and discussing the games again. With me today is Perry Burkham.
Hello there.
Alex Kalafi.
Hello, comrades.
And Adam Abunasa.
I can't believe that I'm on a podcast with Alex Kalafi.
You know what, Adam?
What?
My first ever episode on Connectivity was like episode like 25. It was a Pokemon segment. Episode 200, like 170 later.
Oh, so I don't think I introduced myself again. So yeah, once again, I'm Nicholas Bray.
Oh, hi,
I always
Nick.
Forget to introduce myself. So yeah, we'll just jump into the main meat of this segment. So Perry, how are we approaching today's Pokemon extravaganza?
Well, today is going to be a little different than our couple past ones.
This time we don't have to pay for airfares, right? We don't have to.
I know.
We don't have to go to Sarasaland.
Definitely, that put us in the hole a lot, so we're making up for that. Now I just had to record everything from my house, so. Yeah, so basically, instead of having the whole show and all the songs around one genre, one theme, I had these fine young men pick a song from Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, or Green, because someone's saying, and Green!
Mine were from Green.
Yeah. And so each one picked one song, and they picked a genre, and they sent it to me. And then I tried to do that.
emphasis on try. It's, I was hoping that I would get those easy melodic, you know, ones, and Nick did it, gave me a break, and then I cut myself a break. And then there's Adam and Alex that have to send me these crazy songs, but we'll get into that later. It worked out fine. It worked out just fine.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No spoilers. It may have worked out fine, listeners. We'll find out.
Right. Right, right, right. Let's open up on a song from the game, Saint Anne, just to get us into the mood of what the game sounds like. And, you know, I know everyone knows what it does, but it'll make us feel a lot better. So let's do Saint Anne right now, and then we'll come back. And that was Saint Anne from the game. Nick chose this song. Nick, why do you like this song so much?
It's not that I love the song a lot. It's just, you know, I try to pick something that isn't covered or played to death on a, like, Pokemon sort of soundtrack appreciation things. The track itself gives off, I don't know, it sounds sort of like a royal theme from, like, you might have heard this in, like, in a castle or something in an older RPG from Super Nintendo or something. It has that same sort of rhythmic and melodic feel to it. It feels like it's like a royalty or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, the way that the little chiptune sounds and how it's sustained, it kind of sounds like it's in a big hall, like, and it's having big echoes, and it's just kind of always, it's always, you know, the reverb is always sustained, and so it sounds really cool like that. Yeah, I love that song. I think it's really cool.
Saint Anne. I guess I'm, like, thinking of the anime itself, but Saint Anne is intended to be, like, a kind of regal setting, right? Like a Titanic almost type setup.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's, like, for the rich people, I think.
That's how I always imagined it.
Yeah. The pokey aristocrats or something.
I think the reason that I hate that song is because that part of the game is, like, the first really hard part, so that song, like, is stuck in my head from how much time I had to spend, like, running back and forth, going to the Pokemon Center and coming back, and everyone wanted to fight you.
There's actually a lot of trainers on that boat as well. I usually have to go into every single room because I don't want to miss anything, so
I know,
it
I love
takes
that
me
part.
Ages.
I love, and, like, looking through all the trash cans.
Yeah, it takes ages just to do that.
Yeah.
There's only one trash can that has anything.
So it is this part of the game where Gary's Raticate dies, though, right?
supposedly, yeah.
I think we see that the effects of that in Lavender Town, I think.
Right, but right. But the death happens here.
I don't think we ever saw that. Did we see him die? Like, see him?
Well, no, we didn't see him die. But the Raticate's last appearance was here, I think.
Oh, okay.
And then he disappears. Mm. And
are you talking about, like, in the actual game or, like,
the
anime?
Yeah, the game.
Oh. No, Gary's Raticate doesn't die in a scripted narrative event. No.
Yeah, you see him, and then the next time you battle him, he doesn't have the Raticate anymore. So
a very special episode.
He didn't just, you know, put him in the PC. He died.
Hey, it sounds like a good episode to you know, develop Gary's character, you know. Oh, I kind of like Gary, you know.
Gary has a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
this is something else, but it's one of the best songs on the soundtrack, I think. Another one
you know what, I'll just say it. Vermilion City might be one of the only ones that's better than this song, in my opinion.
Let's go on to the next song then, because it happens to be Vermilion City. Now, this is a song that I covered, the one that I chose. I picked a mountain folk song. I'm bringing back the bouzouki from episode one of Themesters when we did. I put bouzouki on all those Earthbound songs.
Yeah, that was good.
Mother One songs. And this one is Vermilion City. You imagine all these nice shepherds with their lutes and old mandolins up on the mountain getting together at night around a fire. And then there you go. There you have it. It also is, there's also a bonus at the beginning, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're just going to have to listen to it. So I'm going to go ahead and play it, and we'll talk about it right after. Vermilion City, and what was before that?
Jigglypuff. Jigglypuff.
Keep going.
No, I can't do it anymore.
Jigglypuff. Jigglypuff. Yeah.
Now I'm asleep. I should be asleep.
Yeah, what time is it there?
It's only like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh gosh, you should be asleep.
Anyway.
Yeah, so that was Jigglypuff / Vermilion City. I love those tracks so much, and I love that it was adapted for the anime too, and how that's such a big part of the anime, which is really cool. So, and Jigglypuff is like a smash character, which is hilarious. You know, that's one of the biggest trolls in Smash is the Jigglypuff. So.
I'm just saying it's the catchiest song on the entire original soundtrack. It is, I would actually say, my favorite song on the soundtrack. The one I picked is, like, my second, but, like, Vermilion City's on point. It's the song I think of when I think of this soundtrack.
Yes, it is, like, the essential Pokemon sound. Hmm. Like, yeah, totally.
I've never really had that much of an affinity for, like, in that regard, sort of like thinking about it, is like, since you think of Pokemon, I guess my mind usually goes to like Pallet Town or something, instead. But Vermilion City, the song itself does have like that seaside-y, breezy feel to it in the game. This version Perry's done is a little more laid back, and it's closer to those bluegrass tracks that we did on the Mother episode, and it's a style I really like. It's really easy to listen to, and the book ending it with the Jigglypuff theme was nice as well, because it blended quite well, actually.
Yeah, they were in different time signatures, but it doesn't really matter. Same beats per minute, so
yeah.
Alex has his own awesome video podcast called Nintendo News Report. There's not a just audio version, is there?
No, it's one thing we've been talking about for a very long time and people want us to do, so it's probably going to happen someday. But for now, it is exclusive to our Nintendo World Report TV YouTube channel. It happens every week on Wednesday or Thursday area. You can follow our Twitters, which, whatever, that it'll be on there. It is our new news show. It's basically my attempt at reviving what Newscast used to be. And what makes me excited to say that is that we're only like 5 or 6 episodes away from doing more episodes than Newscast did before it turned into Connectivity. So, it's...
Well, Newscast has got another episode in this episode, so there's one more.
It's okay. 7 weeks. But we're going to get there. And as we all know, whatever has the most episodes is the better show.
Yes. Yes.
Happy 200, Connectivity.
Yeah, I would be one of those guys saying, please put an audio form out, because I can listen to that at work, easily. And of course I could put a phone running YouTube in my pocket, but then that's just...
Yeah, but why would you do that?
That's a battery,
I'd do that. I've done that. Anyway.
I'll do it. Anyway, sorry. Alex, I want you... What I was going to say is, I bet you've told this story on a podcast before, but I was just wondering, what was your original Pokemon experience when you first found out about it?
I was scared that you were going to ask me this exact question. As I was walking to my apartment, I was like, I'm going to do this podcast. They're going to ask me how I started playing Pokemon, aren't they? And the answer to that question is, I'm not sure that I remember. Because it was so long ago. Well, I mean, it was one of my first games. It's the game I played when I was, 4 or 5 years old. I was born in 94. So, like, I was late to the party when it came out. But, like, that was the way I connected to my friends, my brother, my cousins. Like, it shaped my childhood as much as anything else did, as much as Nickelodeon did. It was one of the core tenets of my childhood. To the point where I became known as a Pokemon guy, even at age 21. What I will say, though, is however Pokemon got started in my life and however it got its claws into me, what I realized listening to these songs, this soundtrack, and then also being excited for the Virtual Console release happening this week as of this recording, whenever I listen to this music... I get weirdly emotional in a way that I don't get for any other soundtrack, for any game, movie, even any like music made by musicians. I'm not really a music guy. But when I listen to this original soundtrack, the original Junichi Masuda Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow soundtrack, I get weirdly like... I don't know if I tear up, but I get like 2 steps away from tearing up. It just that, it has that resonance. Hit.
Of like, I don't know.
I completely understand that. Like my insides are crying when I listen to Pokemon music.
Yeah, it connects with me on a level that no other game soundtrack does. And whatever I don't know if like Red, Blue, Yellow still stacks up as my favorite RPG of all time because the game's aged weird. I'm sure you guys have talked about that before. But regardless of that, it's probably the most important game soundtrack that has ever affected my life.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I would say that Pokemon Red and Blue has to be, like, for a mass audience, one of the most nostalgic things like in their whole life, because it definitely is for me. You know, because I was so little, so it's just burned into me. So I would recommend for anyone who's listening right now, if you're in a very noisy place, it's not going to be as good, but if listen on headphones, because it's pretty ambient, and I think you'll have a better experience. But anyway, this is Lavender Town. It was kind of scary.
Oh, it was really scary. It, like, filled me, like, with dread. I'm sitting here in my house, and I'm listening on headphones.
It is the spooky town in a weird way. But the way I sort of envisioned Lavender Town back when I was playing it sort of originally, and the inspiration, I guess, for my request, was that Lavender Town is, like, always dreary, rainy, sort of an unpleasant place to be. Always think of it as like it would be like a sparse town with like, you know, a couple of villagers sort of shuffling along the footpath sort of like every now and then. It'd be like, you don't really want to go outside and Lavender Town. It's really grey and bleak. That's why it's raining and like the wind sort of whispering through the buildings and stuff. Like, you know, That's the feeling that you should get from it. Like, I mean, the original track it's sort of like a little bit sparse, but it is sort of like upbeat in a weird way as well.
Yeah, like it's not like bizarre, kind of.
Yeah. Jarring.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you know, this is, it's kind of funny, it's kind of a weird parallel, but I feel like Lavender Town is almost like a town that would be in Earthbound.
Mm.
Like, I feel like they're hitting like the same notes, like the same vibes, like just kind of weird, and there's like a weird tower of Cubone ghosts. So nostalgic that getting to that town over there. So
like Lavender Town's a pretty small town as well, in the game at least, and you just made it through Rock Tunnel and then you come into Lavender Town. It's sort of this like a tiny little town with like not much in it, like a graveyard. I guess like a real life parallel to like maybe the feeling of Lavender Town could be like those, you know how in Japan there's a lot of rural towns that are sort of like have a really small population now, like out in the sticks is like a lot of people have moved away and like there's not many people there. So that sort of be like Lavender Town in real life. It's just like a town with hardly anyone in it.
It sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah.
What's so interesting about the music to Lavender Town as it originally existed, and so what I like about this new song is that like it's concrete. Like, it has a clear, scary theme. You know exactly what it is, and it goes for it. What's weird about the original Lavender Town music is that I can't tell if it's actually trying to be frightening, or if it's trying to be unnerving, or if it's just trying to be, like, a song and then it happened to be interpreted that way. Because the music to Lavender Town sounds really weird and uncomfortable, and the memory I associate with this is actually, like, being scared to even go into that town when I was younger because the music was just so jarring and unnerving in, like, a really unusual, unconventional way.
I think it's sort of, like, irritating. It's, like, sort like a little bit oppressive, maybe. Like, it's just sort of... I don't know. It's not that enjoyable to to listen to for a long time. Like, it's sort of just... And, like, the original release, the song was a bit different, which was later edited slightly because it was causing something, some problems or something. People say it was making people commit suicide, but that's just a...
No, that's a creepypasta. Let's chill.
But yeah, no, there was a technical reason, I think, why they dropped a couple of sound channels or something out of it.
It had, like, really high notes in it that, like, people couldn't even hear that made people, like, a little dizzy. But what I really don't like what they did in Gold and Silver with this song. Just so happy. And I think they took out the Pokemon Tower and put, like, a store there or something. Like,
they brought more people in and it became a happy place, so...
They bulldozed the graveyard and then they just made the song a little more upbeat. It's, like, creepier. Like, they're trying to hide their deep, dark past.
Yeah.
The dark past of Lavender Town from 2 years ago.
I'm listening to it right now. It's what's the difference between the two, and anyone listening at home can listen to this on their own time also. What they do with this song is that how it's like, dun, 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 dun. The notes are longer in the Gold and Silver version, and then also, instead of the weird, like, ghostly track that starts playing under it once it kicks in, it's like almost like this happy, joyous lullaby instead. It is a little unnerving in its own way, but I agree, the original's better.
Yeah, the original is... It's much better.
Why don't for the sake of the audience, why don't I just start playing the one from Gold and Silver right now?
Whoa!
Yeah, now it's playing behind us. Isn't it crazy what you can do?
That is crazy.
You should just not include it. Just leave silence.
It feels like I'm there. It's amazing.
I really wish that we could hear it too, but we're the ghosts of Lavender Town. And we're buried with the graveyard. Yeah, it's creepy.
We are the ghosts of Lavender Town.
We are.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next song.
Sure.
Adam, this is your original soundtrack song pick.
Alright, this song is the ringtone when my brother, Douche, calls me. It's Rival Appears. And this song is just like, because it just makes you feel like, yeah! Like if you were the rival, if someone walked up to you playing this music, you would be like, oh, great, I hate this guy. But if you're playing that music, you feel so awesome. Like, yeah, I'm going to kick your butt. I have the Pokemon that's stronger than your Pokemon. You smell bad, and I'm going to smell you. Like, it's such a good song.
Awesome. Well, let's listen to it right now.
And that was The Rival Appears. So that was Adam's pick. So what did we think about that track, everyone?
I want that song to play, like, out of my gravestone when I die. Like, anyone that shows up. Like, oh no, it's this douchebag.
I just wish we had, like, theme songs for, like, yeah, like, events and stuff like that. Like, maybe, like, you're playing tennis with someone, you just walk in and The Rival Appears theme plays and stuff.
No, I do that kind of stuff. I play it on my phone. I have, like, a giant Bluetooth speaker. I walk into class, like, wearing, like, those really big douchey sunglasses that go over my normal glasses.
And a popped collar and everything.
Oh, hell yeah. But my collar pops itself on accident all the time. Like, I don't know what it is. But it looks really bad.
That's the thing, though. Like, if you actually had this on your gravestone, and then if I went to your gravestone and then this song started playing, I would think you were about to walk up behind me.
I am. My ghost is there. I want to be buried with my 3DS. You're like, woo.
At least we could still maybe street pass you or something if it's hooked up to a power supply.
But only 10 times.
This image in my head is getting funnier and funnier.
About the idea that there will never be a handheld you'll like more than a 3DS between now and the time you die.
Yeah, I want the original 3DS with the lines down the screen and the broken thumb pad.
The ambassador.
Terrible battery life.
Is anyone else picturing Adam, like Adam's grave with like an orange extension cord like going into the ground? like just hooked up to like a, like to the, where like the gravedigger lives?
Dumpe.
Yeah, Dumpe. So Alex, what did you think about this track, The Rival Appears?
It's, even though I guess I don't treat it as like one of the songs on the soundtrack because it's not like extended in the same way Vermilion City or Viridian City or Pallet Town would be, I guess it is a song in its own right. And I guess because it's one of the first sounds you hear in the game, like it's the second song you probably like third or fourth actually, because there's that like intro song, and then there's the and then there's the Professor Oak song, and then Pallet Town. This is still one of the first songs you hear in the game, and I think that's why it's probably one of the most memorable songs in the entire soundtrack as a result.
Yeah. And it's just whenever your rival comes out, you're just like, ah, oh, it's that guy.
Exactly, you associate destroy it him. With Blue.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and go into our third cover song. And Adam, this was your pick. This was the Sylph Company theme.
And this is actually the song that plays in my house.
Yes.
I don't actually like this song, I don't think, really, so.
That was the Sylph Company, evil villain organ music style.
I think it's the theme they play in Google headquarters.
Yeah. Yes. You know, they have a headquarters where I live.
Just go there and leave it.
They have one where I live, too.
Actually, same, honestly. But, well, kind of. Like, I'm in Boston, this one's in Cambridge, so relatively close.
Yeah. Alex, I guess you don't know this, but Perry and I are, like, neighbors. Like, he lives across the river.
Yeah, we literally live, like, 10 minutes apart.
Damn.
Literally. Yeah, like, I think. I mean, I'm assuming if he lives in Omaha. So, it's so weird.
Okay, let me explain myself. I didn't like the original track that much in the game because I was in their stupid building for so long that it just got irritating after a while. So, let me out of this place. It was just so annoying. This version's more fun. It sounds like a fun house or something, like a clown. It's like a dude running around in a clown suit, and it's like like a house of mirrors or something. It gives off that sort of feel.
That's my house, right? Me in my clown suit running around with the mirrors.
No. That's your cosplay. Your cosplaying clown.
But this song, I always felt like it had that, like, you know, that weird, like, water magnet thing that you, like, wave your hand over. What is that instrument? The one that's like, you know the.
Oh, the teleport. Is it the teleporting thing?
No, the musical instrument that has that makes those sounds.
The theremin.
Theremin.
Oh,
yeah.
Theremin. Yeah.
Yeah. This song always reminded me of one of those.
Mm.
As a cover, I was really getting some vibes of the Thriller, like the Vincent Price voiceover from the song Thriller by Michael Jackson. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. But when he does that laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually went to Vincent Price and had him record for us.
Oh, it's dug him up.
Well, yeah, I mean, how else am I going to go to Vincent Price?
He only died 23 years ago, says Wikipedia.
Yeah, Vincent Price is awesome. He's kind of smelly now, but... Yeah, so let's just go ahead and move on. I thought that was fun.
It's good. The cover sounds good. It is a fun track. Inside the game itself, like, I used to just find it got annoying after like a while. But because like the Silth Company thing takes a while to get through. It's like 11 floors of nonsense, isn't it? Like,
yeah. Even this past playthrough, it took me a very long time to get through that. And I'm a grown man, and I had the strategy guide.
It
still took a long time.
Yeah. This is where you get the Lapras, right?
Yeah, you get the Lapras. Well, first you have to lose
the Master
Gary.
Ball, right?
I lost to my rival and got sent all the way back out, and then I came back in, and I was completely lost. I had to do it all again. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's so awful.
Oh, the tragedy.
The tragedy, you know. I'm a grown-up. I have better things to do than be wandering around. Self Company.
Maybe you should beat, you know, Gary, or whatever his name is.
Gary. Well, I did it out of order. Like, I found out you could glitch and, like, skip a big part, so I did that, but then I was too weak to beat the Self Company. So I had to go back and do all the stuff that I skipped.
I think that's called sweet comeuppance.
Mm. I think that's called being a novice.
You're a novice. Novice!
We are going to move on to the next song, Celadon City, and also a bonus track right before. So let's go ahead and listen to him right now.
So now is the part in the show where we're going to be talking a little about Mr. Junichi Masuda, who made the music for the original Pokemon games, but also took on greater roles later in his career. So the way I understand it, and I think I probably have this at least 80% right, you guys can go to Wikipedia for some of the gaps, Satoshi Tajiri, the original Pokemon guy, was the designer, everything. He was the main honcho for both Pokemon Red and Blue and Pokemon Gold and Silver. That was his baby, and it's probably the main reason why those two generations have specifically that classic Pokemon feeling, as opposed to Ruby and Sapphire onward, which took their own huge turns. Yeah. So he was the guy in the original. Junichi Masuda was the guy who did the music in the original games. Now, as the series went on and as Tajiri stepped back more and more, Masuda started picking up roles. And even though Tajiri was still doing stuff through Fire Red and Leaf Green significantly, by the time Pokemon Diamond and Pearl came out, Junichi Masuda became the head guy for Pokemon. He was the main guy making the decisions. He was the director. He basically became the new face of Pokemon, starting from Ruby and Sapphire, but especially starting from Diamond and Pearl. So he was the one who took the reins over from Satoshi Tajiri after Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, especially. Or that's the way I understand
it. Do we know why he sort of stepped down or stepped away
from
it?
So here's... I have some guesses. It's kind of.
Yeah. There's probably nothing concrete.
I have a guess,
but...
too.
So here's... I'm going to be careful in how I word this. But Satoshi Tajiri is... He doesn't like dealing with people, as far as I understand, or at least he struggles with it for reasons I'm not going to get into, but you can find it out relatively easily if you look on his Wikipedia page. Specific reasons, he does not deal with people that well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he just stepped away, but the fact that he's still an executive producer role makes me think that he's still doing stuff behind the scenes. I'm guessing he just doesn't look... He's not necessarily a face of the company. What I bet happens now is he's probably like a Miyamoto sort of role almost, where like he's making final approvals or like he's giving feedback, but the guy steering the ship, as far as I know, is Mr. Masuda.
Yeah, I thought it was because his horse died.
What?
Is this a Solitiba reference?
I have no clue what that is.
It's that's the horse racing game that they put on iOS in Japan. Oh.
he developed that game when he got a new horse.
Oh. Okay.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Also a recommendation, just a Pokemon recommendation. Game Center CX, the very popular Japanese game show with Areno. It's basically the Retro Game Challenge, the show that's based on. There's a special that I bet you can find on YouTube where Areno basically goes to the Pokemon Game Freak headquarters around the time of Ruby Sapphire, Fire Red Leaf Green, I think, and he actually talks to and interviews Satoshi Tajiri for a very extended period of time, so you can actually get a good feel for what he's really like in that. And that's... It's there's something so outrageously fascinating about the creation of Pokemon that I dream of the day that a Pokemon Historia could somehow come together.
Isn't that what this show is?
Yeah. It's... yeah.
It's beautiful.
So as for Junichi Masuda, he also has created music for Mendel Place.
Does anyone know anything about that?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Mario and Wario.
So Mario and Wario, that's the game where Mario has a bucket on his head.
Yes.
And it's all in English, but it never came out here.
Yeah, what the heck? That I have to play that game. That sounds like one of my... Like, it would be my favorite game.
Weird.
And then the other two that we listed here is Pulse Man and Drill Dozer, which most people are more familiar with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never played any of those either.
Neither have I, actually.
I played a little bit of Pulse Man, I think, once. Which...
Did it remind you of Pokemon music?
I don't remember.
You didn't go, whoa, this is the same composer from Pokemon.
And Masuda's favorite Pokemon is Victini.
Victini is pretty good.
That's okay.
It's the triple zero Pokemon, which is kind of cool.
I mean, it's got nothing. It's got nothing on Porygon. I mean,
it's very true.
Well, should we go through our favorite Pokemon?
Yeah, let's do it right now. In fact, hey, this is perfect because now I can let you guys know. If anyone listened to the first one, if you saw in the chapter art, I hired someone to make a little drawing of the characters from Earthbound Beginnings playing in a bluegrass band. And now I'm going to have your guys' favorite Pokemon playing in a band, each in the style that you picked.
Oh my gosh.
So, and if you can, the listeners probably have already seen it, but if you look down, you could probably look right now at the chapter art and see it. So, just letting you know. So why don't we go ahead and go through our favorite Pokemon.
Actually, before we do that, Take a guess as to which Pokemon belongs to which host.
All right, the four Pokemon that we chose are Dragonite, Squirtle, Oddish, and Nidoqueen.
I just want to say that three of those Pokemon totally suck.
And yours is one of them.
Oh, that is incorrect.
No, I agree with you, Adam. It's just that, like, yours is one of them.
No, mine is the best.
Everyone knows mine's the best.
Mine has such well-distributed stats with a moveset that complements it just so well. I'm sorry, I just gave it away.
It's, you obviously chose Oddish.
Well, on that note, yeah, why don't you go ahead and comment and get back to us and do who do you think is who? And we'll remind us at the end of the episode. But let's do the final cover song. This is Alex's pick. Mm-hmm. And this was the one that almost made me kill myself. Because he picked the battle music, which is like the one I was just dreading. I wanted you to pick whatever you wanted, but I was...
The only reason why I picked it was because someone picked Vermilion City. I was just like, this one's good
that
enough.
That was me.
So we can blame Adam.
I totally would have picked a different one, and then you could have had Vermilion City. That's okay. This worked out okay, I think.
Okay.
So,
wait, Adams was Silphco, wasn't it?
No, yeah, Vermilion.
The evil villain music.
Yeah. So, here we're going to play battle music theme. Was the battle music from Pokemon from when you've heard the song. If you haven't heard the song, it's amazed that you're listening to this. Let's just put it that
way. Why are you listening to this?
Yeah, that would be the weirdest thing. Anyway, so that was Alex's pick. He wanted me to do a ska version of it, and it turned out like something. I don't know. Alex, so you tell me what you think.
Okay. So I don't think I necessarily... I think I use ska as like a frame of reference because ska is a frame of reference for most things in my life. But as I really just like what I originally wanted, which you did totally to a T, is I thought this song would work well if like the melody had a heavy horn component and if the bass was utilized. Which is exactly what you did. You utilized the melody by using horns, you did a strong bass, and then you used a piano as sort of like an in-between connecting the two parts. It was just interesting, because like, ska is essentially like elements of jazz and elements of rock put together. But what I like about this is that it's almost like a modernized version of the original song, but with jazzy elements to it.
Right.
Like, it's the pianos gives it, like, this jazzy feel I'm really into. But overall, I would actually say that, like, this is the most faithful of the four, which is not a good or bad thing. Like, I liked all of them, but I would say this was the most faithful of your four covers to the original song.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it sounded kind of like a loungy version, like if I were in like the hotel lounge of like a Pokemon hotel,
Bossa Nova,
and someone would be like playing this song, I'd be like, you know, drinking my Poke Teeny or whatever, probably battling like 20 people at the bar, because you know that's how Pokemon is.
Yeah,
but yeah, I liked it.
When I was younger, I asked my mom if she could get a scientist to make me a Lugia. I just wanted to share that with you guys. I think I used the phrase "get a scientist." Like, I remember that distinctly from like 15 years ago.
Hey, I'm sure someone's going to make a sort of illegal, like, game or virtual experience for Oculus at some point. So that'll be pretty good when that happens.
You know, I like to imagine baby Alex with this deep voice, like.
A nice baritone.
Years old, like, Mom!
Find me a scientist.
That's exactly what I sounded like.
A scientist.
I sounded like Forrest Gump when I was 6 years old.
As for my thoughts on the battle music track, yeah, a lot of the times I don't really get into the battle music by just listening to it, and especially like covers. Like, covers can be hit and miss. I think this one is nice because it has a bit of a softer sound to it. It's not quite as sharp. All the instruments seem to have a bit of a, I don't know, can't explain it, but like a very soft, like small muffle on it or something. It just doesn't seem quite as in your face. It seems more relaxed slightly. Do you guys get that from it? Or?
It's every element.
Like they're just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, every element of the soundtrack feels deliberate. Mm.
And so many times with covers, people will be like, oh, let's play it as hard and as fast as we can. And you just feel like so like offended. Like, why are you yelling video game music at me? But this was all like inviting. Like, oh, come and remember all these like moments in your life.
Well, thank you. I guess that's the end of the show.
We didn't play my... I had the champion theme, didn't I?
Oh.
We can close that out. Well, that'll be the last track, maybe.
Hey, yeah. Hey, there you go. That'd be perfect. Is that okay with you,
yeah,
or do you want to talk about it?
No,
you
want to
talk about it first?
I chose everything I chose due to an absence of Vermilion City.
The champion theme
is actually
good,
like super good. It's a perfect like final boss theme.
So we have one last song from our listener Alex Kulafi.
This is sent in.
Sent into the email, which I am actually part of.
Okay, before we end everything, why don't we say goodbye to all of the nice co-hosts we have here that help make this whole thing work. Alex, thank you for coming on and helping. And also, if you would have... See, I didn't realize Vermilion was, like, your favorite thing ever. And if
no, it's all
you would have got it...
Back, yeah. What? Go ahead.
Okay. What genre would you have picked for it?
Actually, I think that one might have gone better with ska than the battle theme would have. It's like it's a genre isn't represented with Pokemon that much. So I would choose ska regardless of the song you gave me, just to see what you would do with it.
That's fine. Yeah.
But also, can I say, cool. It was fantastic to be here. It's been a while since I've been on Connectivity, and I am over the moon that I got to be with you guys to celebrate its 200th episode. So thank you very much for having me, and always a pleasure, Nick, Perry, and Adam.
Thank
awesome.
You.
It's good having you back on Connectivity. You have to do it a bit more often.
One day.
Yeah, and Adam, thank you for being on this segment again, as always, with Connectivity.
Yeah, thank you for having me on here. I can't believe that I've already been on, like, 4 episodes of Connectivity. It's crazy, you know? They just blew right past.
What? You've been on way more than 4 episodes
now. Oh, yeah, no, I guess. I was trying to count, but then Perry started talking to me, and I got lost at 4. But yeah, I'm still pretty new here, but it's cool that it's been going for a long time, and I've been listening for a long time. And Alex Kulapi, like, is on the show with me. Like, it's weird.
It's weird that you're weirded out by that, Adam. I'm like, really? That's a big deal?
That's a really big deal, man. You've been on the radio before.
And Nick. Yep. I'm going to Nick now. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being the spoon that stirs the drink in this podcast.
Well, thanks for still, you know, doing these segments, Perry. I know it's a lot of work for you, but they are fun to do every couple of months or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's fun.
If people want to maybe suggest a game to do on a future installment of the Themesters segment, please do that. You could do it either TalkBack or via Twitter, which is @ConnectivityNWR. You could also send an email requesting a track, which is connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And we're also now going to put out an offer for a bonus track for Pokemon. So if someone would like to tweet us or email us a suggestion for a bonus track that Perry will create a cover for and throw it up on the SoundCloud that we have going for the Themesters songs, please do that, and we can enjoy another cover from Perry.
Yeah, just it'll take 2 seconds. Just follow Connectivity, and then, you know, and you'll get that tweet, and then just respond to it, and then I'll pick one, or someone will pick one, and then we'll do it, and it'll be really fun. So, all right, well, that'll wrap us up then. Thanks, guys, again for coming on, and we will do this again at some point. And, yes,
at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks, guys. See you later.
Good night. / goodbye.
Good day for Nick. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I don't actually like this song, I don't think, really, so... Oh, well.
Well, you can't come over
the
then, Nick.
It's a great way to go into the song.
I didn't mean it to start. I didn't mean it to come off like that too much.
In fact,
well.
When you're...
This song sucks, Adam.
When you're
pick a better song.
Say and sucks,
Nick. I pretty
much hate
this song.
When you're editing this, can you, like, have Nick saying, "I don't really like this," be the last thing people hear before you start playing it?
Yes, I can.
Jigglypuff. Jigglypuff theme.
I think I used the phrase, get a scientist.